space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Didn't that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
seven, six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. Blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
I was a little slow on the draw on that one right there, wasn't I? So, everything is fuel. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. Also, if you're on the Super Chat chat room, you can scroll down and there is a link for People for People Radio Network. Go over and join them as well. So anyway, you know, they have been saying for years that we're going to run out of oil, or we need to get off of fossil fuels and this and that. I don't ever see a day when that actually comes about until you get into some really serious technology, futuristic technology. But nonetheless, I don't think that it's going to happen anytime soon, because the what they like to call the fossil fuel industry, coal industry and so on, they want to stay in business and they want to keep making money. So they're going to fight against it tooth and nail all the way through the deal. But today's show, I want to try to put out there a little bit of information from the past, a little bit of information from the present, and look into the possibilities for the future of why it is that we shouldn't even have such thing as garbage dumps anymore. We shouldn't have landfills. We shouldn't have waste plastic problems. We shouldn't have all these issues where we're constantly having to dig up the earth in order to get more fuel or more resources. There's probably more than enough resources available already out there, you know, laying on the ground and, you know, floating in the water and all that kind of stuff to probably fuel all these nations for probably generations to come. And then even at that, you know, if you understand what's going on in the physics and the way that, you know, different things like gasification and actually wood burning and stuff like that work, you end up with other products as well. So with that said, you know, by burning fuel, you can actually make fuel. It sounds crazy, don't it? But it's the truth. Anyway, you know, everything's fuel out there. No matter what you think about it, if it's carbon-based, it's fuel. Even water is fuel. Now, there's a lot of people out there that don't understand. They like to quote the thermodynamics to try to debunk the fact that you could use water as fuel. Oh, it takes too much energy to get enough energy out or whatever. We've heard it all, regardless of the fact that it's already proven technology. But nonetheless, you know, we'll just humor those type of people for a while. I say all the time, I said, you can't find free energy. You're simply not looking hard enough. You know, it's mind-blowing to see that we have more resources necessary to resolve all the problems that they say we have in this world, yet you can't seem to get anything accomplished. It's quite frustrating. But there are those out there who are, you know, really good engineers that shoot for great efficiency in their machines, you know, making their machines lighter and stuff. And so, with that said, if something, you make an engine that's lighter, an engine that's more energy efficient, if you understand what's going on in that engine, you understand where the weaknesses are, you can fix those weaknesses. You can re-engineer these things to be even better than they were before. So with that said, I'm going to play this real quick right here. It's about the Boss Water Injection System.
Water Boost uses the cooling effect of water to help gasoline direct injection systems place more and cooler intake air in the combustion chamber. This makes combustion particularly efficient and delivers an extra kick when accelerating. Injecting a fine spray of water into the intake port at high loads reduces the temperature in the combustion chamber. This lowers the knocking tendency of the engine and permits an earlier ignition timing, which in turn optimizes operation of the gasoline engine. The result is a 13% reduction in fuel consumption or a 5% increase in power output. Furthermore, Bosch water injection makes it possible to design engines with a higher compression ratio, which leads to a CO2 reduction of up to 4% in the WLTC test cycle. The Bosch water injection system includes a specially developed water injector that is precisely placed so that it injects a fine spray of water into the combustion chamber via the intake port. Besides the water injector and the water rail, the system contains further components. A water pump. An electronic pump controller. An electronic engine control unit for the entire system. And last, a water tank. flash water injection systems are a complementary technology for internal combustion engines. As such, they reduce CO2 emissions and fuel consumption. At the same time, they make it possible to improve engine performance.
So essentially what you just heard is a company that makes a water injection system that makes your engine more efficiently, they run more efficiently, reduce emissions and make it, you know, improves the horsepower on there. It's not a new concept. They were doing this way back in the day. You know, they were injecting water into airplane engines to get out of a stall, or basically farmers, whenever they got their tractors up to operating temperature, they would inject water into the tractors so that they can save on fuel. So, you know, even a small savings of fuel still makes the thing more efficient, and you would think that that's what the major portion of the industry would want to, move towards. But, you know, always hear about this type of technology, about water injection systems. You know, the racing industry uses it to basically use the laws of thermodynamics to control premature detonation by cooling the, the fuel in the cylinder off a little bit, so that the once the cylinder gets up to a really hot temperature, you can get premature detonation. So that, whenever the cylinder is so hot, you don't need a spark anymore. And so that's where every once in a while you'll have a car that have a problem where they call it dieseling. When you shut the thing off, it just won't shut down. And so sometimes you actually have to flood the car in order to get it to shut down. Well, that's probably not really good on the engine, but if they would have had water injection systems in those particular engines when the engine got to that temperature, it wouldn't be an issue as far as the dieseling problem that you'd have once you try to shut your car off. So anyway, they already knew the physics of how this thing works. You could either use the water injection system to cool down the deal, or if in the case of when I'm talking about actually building and designing and engineering an engine that will run on pure distilled water using all those same physics. Because once you understand the physics of what water does in different states, when you're boiling it and when it turns into steam, when you vaporize it, and what happens when that vapor hits a really hot cylinder, and so on down the line. You know, back in the early 80s or whatever, I was a boiler technician in the U.S. Navy, and I learned a lot about boilers and safety protocols and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so mechanically I could see inside that boiler and I could tell you what was going on. I understood the concepts and the physics of what was happening there. Well, if you took all that prior knowledge and you add it to modern day technology, we've got things like induction heating systems that's capable with electricity heating up a cylinder to whatever temperature you want. If you use these induction heating systems, you can literally turn metals white hot, and you can know from different experiments that these certain types of metals will get hot quicker. For example, stainless steel in an induction heating system, it don't take but a short period of time for that thing to get incredibly hot really fast. And so once you know your operating temperatures, now you can start getting into engineering this this engine to do what it would do at certain temperatures, such as instantaneously superheating and flashing the steam, expanding 1600 times its volume and pressing that piston down. So you're actually running this engine like a steam engine at first. But with further engineering, you could take that same deal and either use plasma technology for your ignition source to separate the hydrogen and oxygen, which essentially you'll be talking about sending radio waves into that thing to shake those broken down molecules literally apart and then igniting them. Stan Myers was doing it back in the 70s, but a lot of people didn't understand his technology. So to this very day, there's a lot of disinformation about Stan Myers' research. But if you actually took the time to do real research, you'd find out that, you know, he was really doing what he said he was doing. He's got patents on the stuff. You know, he's no longer with us, unfortunately, because the system didn't really necessarily want him to be telling everybody you could actually run your car on water, because look at where we're at right now. We have what is known as the petrol dollar. So anyway, you know, everything can be used as fuel. You know, at certain temperatures, anything in this world would melt. You know, if you look at lava and you think about what's actually in that lava, and that it's actually able to literally liquefy rock, you know, molten rock, and melts it. And so there, if you understand the pressure and the temperature and all these different things, and you think about, you know, around, you know, these lava vents or volcanoes, all the different types of gases that are coming out of, some of which are really extremely toxic, some of which are really extremely powerful as far as, you know, flammable-wise or even explosive-wise. And these get vented into the atmosphere all the time. But, you know, the environmentalists ain't out there complaining about, you know, volcanoes and saying, why don't we go out there and put a cork in it or something like that. They don't understand how the mechanics of nature actually works. And so, you know, they're complaining about your automobile while your volcano's out there spewing out all kinds of crud. Matter of fact, it's not even safe to go around the base of a volcano because of the physics of CO2 and carbon monoxide, you know, which are not much difference, only the fact that there's one oxygen molecule less in one than the other, it, you know, don't matter. But either way, both of them will pull up in low-lying areas, and you'll either get carbon monoxide poisoning or you'll get carbon dioxide suffocation. So... you know, pick your poison, so to speak. But either way, once you understand the physics of everything that nature has to offer, and you realize that anything can be used as fuel, anything, then now it's a case of engineering those types of things to be not only safe, so that you're not getting explosions, and you know, so that they're, you know, in themselves efficient, and you don't have to worry about you know, noxious fumes coming out or whatever safety precaution needs to be, even to the extent of getting a perfect burn every time and literally you know burning your trash, you know. So if you ain't got no garbage anymore to go to landfill, then you don't have no purpose for landfills. That's going to open up a little bit more land, you'd think. Anyway, let me play this right here. This is a deal from Evinrude. Evinrude did something pretty cool with their boat motors. And if you listen in, you'll understand what the heck the significance of it. I'll actually put it all in perspective later on.
Hi, I'm Carl Sandstrom. I'm the product manager for Evinrude Outboards at BRP. You know, recently, the staff at Boating Magazine examined the myth that today's four-stroke outboards get better fuel efficiency than two-stroke outboards. Well, after examining the data, the staff over at Boating Magazine concluded that when it comes to fuel efficiency, the differences were just too close to call between today's two-stroke and four-stroke outboard engines. So what are the facts? How can today's direct-injected modern advanced technology engines compete with the best four strokes on the market today in terms of fuel efficiency and actually beat them in head-to-head competitions? Well, we're about to find out. Let's take a look. The popular myth that four-stroke outboard engines get better fuel economy than two-stroke outboard engines is largely based on the perception that this 5.5 horsepower 1960 Evinrude is indicative of what a two-stroke outboard engine is, and this 50 horsepower Johnson, another carbureted two-stroke. Well, these are the motors that the industry was built on. They were available for many, many, many years. But today, they've been replaced by direct-injected two-stroke engines with advanced technology such as the Evinrude E-Tech. And when you take a look at what direct injection does for a two-stroke outboard, one of the things it does do is dramatically increase the fuel efficiency of an outboard so that it can compete head-to-head with any four-stroke on the market today. Now let's take a look at the Evinrude E-Tech 150-horsepower direct-injected two-stroke engine. This is a perfect example of what direct-injected two-stroke technology looks like today. This engine is extremely fuel-efficient, quiet, is the most compact, lightest weight, highest performing engine in its class, bar none. Let's take a look into what technology helps it achieve that kind of performance. The problem with those older carbureted two-stroke outboard engines is that they used a carburetor to introduce the air and fuel into the engine and ultimately into the combustion chamber. In doing so, some unburned fuel was allowed to escape out of the exhaust port. That resulted in higher emissions and poor fuel economy. In contrast to that, the advanced technology direct injection two-stroke features a system that injects the fuel directly into the combustion chamber. This E-Tech injector injects fuel straight into the combustion chamber rather than in the front of the engine. And what it does is it puts the fuel into the cylinder after the exhaust port is closed.
I want to pause this just for a second because this injector that he's showing is already one piece of the puzzle that is already engineered and ready to go for a direct injection style system that you could actually use that water technology that I've been talking about for a long time in order to get that fuel in there. And with the water injection systems that they have, we got all the pieces of the puzzle, folks, necessary to literally control. You know, the old carburetors, if you look at how the old carburetors, they had an air filter, and so, you know, you would use the vacuum of the engine as it's working to suck in the air from the outside while you're injecting your fuel in, basically old style ones was using a pump, and then it would go through, your carburetor and mix with that air that you had. And so in your carburetor, you had an airflow and you had a fuel flow that you had to get that mixture just right, or your car would either run too lean or, just quite the opposite. But either way, once you got that, perfectly tuned, it would run as best as it could with the deal. But later on, when people wanted to build hot rods, they found more efficient ways in order to be able to push more air into the thing, even all the way up to, ram air induction and turbo technology and such like that they were actually able to push more air, compress the air, push it in there, cool that air down just a little bit, and then ram more oxygen down in there so that they can get a better, stronger burn off of there. But even those were still inefficient the way that they're running even to today with the modern day, fuel injection systems. But this boat right there, this boat motor that this guy's talking about, it has a lot of what would be necessary to literally build an engine that would run on pure distilled water. So let's keep rolling here.
Think very much like a four-stroke to make this a closed environment and not allowing any fuel to escape out of the exhaust. That results, again, in extremely good fuel efficiency and very low emissions. This engine not only is the best performing engine in its class, but it also is rated as a CARB 3-star engine and features some of the lowest emissions in the industry today. Another advanced technology feature that the old carbureted two-stroke engine simply didn't have was an onboard computer. This is the onboard computer for this direct-injected two-stroke Evinrude E-Tech. We call it an EMM. It's an engine management module. It's capable of making over 8 million calculations a second. And it controls everything from ignition timing, spark duration, fuel injection duration, angle, all those things that the engine needs to maximize its power output, optimize its fuel efficiency, and minimize the emissions of the engine. Earlier, I mentioned that this Evinrude direct-injected two-stroke 150-horsepower engine was the most compact and lightweight engine in its class. There's good reason for that. If you were to look at a comparable 150-horsepower four-stroke, you'd see that the cylinder head design incorporates all the components that are required for a four-stroke. Things like valves, camshafts, lifters, timing chains or timing belts all add weight and complexity to a four-stroke engine. is simply not present in a direct injected two-stroke. That means a more compact, lighter weight design that can result in 10 to 20% less weight for an outboard motor. And that can translate on a V6 to as much as 50 to even 100 pounds of additional weight for a four-stroke. A 100-pound advantage with a direct injected two-stroke can translate into better fuel efficiency on the water for the consumer. All of the Evinrude E-Tech outboard engines feature direct injection with stratified combustion. Stratified combustion allows the engine to operate extremely efficiently by only using a small portion of the cylinder's potential at slower speeds. In stratified combustion, because we're only using a small portion of the cylinder, it's kind of like having an empty room with an aerosol can.
Let me pause this for a second. Essentially, because he's using high-tech terminology to put it in simpler terms, when you're like at idle speeds, you don't need near the amount of fuel going into that system. And so you can use like, you know, half the travel of the piston in order to just put less fuel in there. So the computer is actually telling this thing to drop less fuel into this thing. And whenever you need that extra power, as soon as you rev that thing up, the computer will tell it that you need more fuel, and then go on down like that. So the computer's actually helping to save on how much fuel, because you're not wasting too much fuel by, you know, putting too much in there, and then most of it ends up going out the exhaust because it doesn't get a proper burn. And so you don't actually have to have compensation for, you know, extra air being shoved in that thing, you know, so that it can mix with the fuel and get a better burn. So that's basically what he's trying to explain right here, but the way he was explaining, I didn't think the average Joe would understand. So here we go.
Spraying the aerosol out, and you ignite the flame at the end of it, and you have a small combustion event going on in the room. The rest of the room's unaffected. But as more power is needed, you transfer over to homogeneous combustion. That's akin to filling an entire room with, say, an open valve from an LP tank. Now have a combustion event, and the whole room would be involved in the combustion event. Well, that's what happens when the motor transitions from stratified to homogeneous. That's when the engine needs to make all of its power, and is able to produce the full potential of what the engine's capable of in terms of power, torque, and fuel efficiency and emissions. So as we can see, the myth that four-stroke outboards get better fuel efficiency than two-stroke outboards is simply that, a myth. Today's modern, advanced technology, direct-injected two-strokes like the Evinrude E-Tech are vastly superior to the old carbureted two-strokes of the past. And they make a viable, smart option for anybody who wants a powerful, clean, fuel-efficient outboard engine.
So that technology mixed with the water injection technology, modern-day computers, would basically add to the mix of the engine that I keep talking about that needs to be built, one that actually will run on pure distilled water using the laws of physics to your advantage. I mean, in the race industry, they understand that they can use that water injection to cut down on premature detonation of the cylinder while the fuel's in there, because the engine is obviously running so hot that you got to find a way to cool that cylinder down so that you don't get compression ignition too early before, you know, the exhaust portion of it is ready to go, or even the injection portion, you know, then that would cut down on the knocking and pinging that you'd hear when that engine is being overworked. So you got multiple different things already that would show that you could take that doggone engine, if you want to properly engineer it, and you could get it to use that water as fuel. Even if you was to start off by making a water gasoline hybrid or a water diesel hybrid, and you're going to use that that basically what they like to call fossil fuel, you're going to use that just long enough to get those cylinders up to operating temperature, and then these other technologies would take over, and then you would shift over automatically. You know, a computer would tell it to shift right on over to the other fuel system, which would be the water. And so that process there, you're heating this system up and you're keeping it hot, And then whenever you needed to raise the temperature, you could do the opposite of what they do for water injection and inject some regular gasoline or diesel in there to bring that temperature up. So you could control it in reverse just like you can control it in the opposite direction. So it could actually be done. It could actually be engineered. You could run that engine as if it was a steam engine first, using induction technology and vaporization technology, and then you'd have that cylinder hot. You inject really tiny amounts of water vapor into that thing, and as soon as that water vapor hit that piston, it would superheat and flash the steam and produce pressure that would push that piston down. So now let's move along here. Now we're getting into gasification.
Nearly 5,000 people of various faiths and backgrounds visit Ajmer Sharif in Rajasthan every day. The revered shrine gives livelihood to many. Over 200 small-scale units operate close by. Mostly, these entrepreneurs are mithai walas or sweet makers specializing in a local sweet called Sohan Halwa. Nadeem's ancestral house in Ajmer has served as a sweet making unit for almost a century. The skills have passed on from one generation to another. But it is under Nadeem's supervision that the business has found a new direction. Every day, Nadeem caters to an order of nearly 100 kilos of Sohan Halwa. A few years back, he couldn't work with such ease. Like most of the other manufacturers, he used LPG or at times even kerosene as a fuel. But today he works with a biomass gasifier, a clean and cost-effective technology. A regular supply of biomass and assured services after the installation have made the gasifier a reliable option.
सबसे बड़ी इसमें बचत ये है कि किसी तरह का कोई रिस्क नहीं है. गैस के मुकाबले में 25% इसका 1/4 है खर्च. एलपीजी का सिलेंडर भी 800 रुपए का आता है, तो ये हमें बहुत महंगा पड़ जाता है. इसमें हमारा 200 रुपए में काम हो जाता है लकड़ी में गैसीफायर में. और सबसे बड़ी बात है कि पैसों की बचत. व्यापारी के लिए सिर्फ अपनी बचत जरूरी है.
Biomass is the oldest fuel used by man since ancient times. The gasifier technology burns the biomass more effectively by converting wood into a combustible gas. Here is how it works. For the gasification process, ambient air is blown into the biomass gasifier. As the fuel bed gets ignited, the combustion process starts and temperature inside the gasifier reactor increases. This is diverted to a cyclone separator, which removes the dust particles from the gas. And this clean gas is now ready to fuel the furnace. The Energy and Resources Institute, or TERI, started developing the gasifier technology in 1984. The idea was to offer an alternative for small and micro enterprises that run on thermal energy and require temperatures of up to 1000 degrees Celsius. In India, the small and micro industry employs over 31 million people. One third of these units run on thermal energy from fossil fuels, agro residues like rice husk, groundnut shell and tires. By reducing smoke and pollutants, a gasifier helps improve the working conditions besides offering cost benefits. Initially, when the TERI gasifier was...
I'll pause that just for a sec because I don't know if you missed that or not. But they're even using tires, old car tires, for fuel. You look at what they do with car tires these days, if they're not just laying around or laying off in the ditch somewhere. There are people that actually grind it up and mix it in with asphalt to, make new streets, roads and stuff. But they're actually using these old tires, and the way that this system's working, they're getting a clean burn off of it. So anything out there, you know, that normally would end up in a landfill or be hard to dispose of is basically being turned into fuel to run their industries. So let's keep rolling here.
Was introduced in various enterprises, few understood the potential of this technology.
The initial problem basically was that of the acceptance by the user. So one of the challenges was in learning from the users and adopting our gasifier technology to their needs. This is an interactive process. So this has taken nearly 2 years, during which time we continuously kept modifying the technology so that the user is satisfied.
In 1994, support came from the Swiss Agency for Development and Cooperation.
STC's program in India has always been on rural development. So when in 94 STC saw gasifier for heat application, it was convinced of the potential the technology had and decided to demonstrate it in different small sectors. That triggered the promotion of that technology in a variety of sectors such as dyeing. So it proliferated in some sense.
Since then, there has been no looking back. Gasifiers are being constantly adapted and introduced to different kinds of industries. In Bangalore, a midday meal scheme caters food every day to 64,000 children using 2 biomass gasifiers. Gasifiers have replaced LPG cylinders and the productivity of the kitchen has increased considerably. The food produced here now caters to 250 schools. Elsewhere in Bangalore, the Siltang units too are using the gasifier. When it was first introduced in 1998, many small units were shutting shop due to rising fuel prices. But the Terry gasifier consumed less than half the fuel wood used in traditional ovens. The benefits were visible soon. Reduction in fuel cost by 40 to 70%, savings on fuel per day between 200 to 800 rupees, and improved working conditions and less smoke.
ಮತ್ತೆ ಅದು ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟ್ ಮಾಡಿದ್ಮೇಲೆ ಈ ಕೆರೋಸಿನ್ ಡೀಸೆಲ್ ಸ್ಟವ್ ಹಾಕೊಂಡು ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟ್ ಮಾಡ್ತೀವಿ ನಮ್ಮ ಡೈಯಿಂಗ್ ನ. ಸೊ ಅದರಲ್ಲಿ ರೇಟ್ ಜಾಸ್ತಿ ಬಿದ್ದೋಗ್ಬಿಡ್ತು, ಕಾಸ್ಟ್ ಜಾಸ್ತಿ ಬಿದ್ದೋಗ್ತು. ನಿಲ್ಲಿಸಿ ಗ್ಯಾಸಿಫಿಯರ್ ಒಂದು ನಮ್ಮ ರವಿ ಅವರು ಅದನ್ನ ಕೊಟ್ಟರು, ಅದನ್ನು ರನ್ ಮಾಡಿದ್ದೀವಿ. ಮತ್ತೆ ಅದರಲ್ಲಿ ಸ್ಮೋಕ್ ಏನು ಕಂಪ್ಲೇಂಟ್ ಇಲ್ಲ, ಮತ್ತೆ ಅಮೌಂಟ್ ಕೂಡ ಸೇವ್ ಆಗ್ತಾ ಇದೆ. ಡೀಸೆಲ್ ಬಂದು 35 rupees ಆಗಿದೆ ಇವಾಗ. 35 rupees ಹತ್ರ ಡೈಲಿ ಒಂದು ಒಲೆಗೆ 2000 ಚಿಲ್ಲರೆ ಖರ್ಚಾಗ್ಬಿಡುತ್ತೆ. ಅದನ್ನ ನಾವು ಗ್ಯಾಸಿಫೈರ್ ಹಾಕಿದ್ರೆ ಒಂದು 800 rupees, 850 rupees ಅದು ಮುಗಿತಾ ಇದೆ.
Nearly 20 gasifiers are operational now in the Siltang units of Bangalore. In 2001, Terry installed the first biomass gasifier in a crumb rubber unit near Kochi. It replaced the conventional furnace for drying latex. This marked a turning point for the local rubber industry.
1 liter of diesel here, a landed cost in a factory would be around 36 rupees. That is substituted with around 3.25 kgs of firewood at around 2.5 rupees, which is not possible with any other form of energy other than a gasifier. Whether it be natural gas, coal, no, nothing can substitute it the way the gasifier can substitute.
Today, 10 rubber making units work on the Terry designed gasifiers. Gasifiers are also operational in sectors like silk reeling in Karnataka, namkeen making and plaster of Paris units in Rajasthan, steel re-rolling mills in Haryana, cooking for school children in Orissa, and tobacco curing in Myanmar. One of the reasons for its popularity has been the quick payback period of 3 to 4 months. The technology has also led to the inception of two more industries, that of gasifier manufacturing and wood chip suppliers for fuel. At Chandrapur Power Works in Yamunanagar in Haryana, gasifiers are manufactured for several applications. Since they joined hands with Terry in the year 2000, they have sold many gasifiers to different industries. The technology also comes with a reliable customer support system for the users. Workshops are conducted regularly for buyers as well as the service providers. 8 gasifier manufacturers have been licensed by Terry.
हम जो ट्रेनिंग वर्कशॉप देते हैं उसमें सबसे पहले लोगों को इसके बारे में ओरिएंटेशन देते हैं कि ये गैसिफायर कैसे चलते हैं, इसको कैसे ऑपरेट करना चाहिए, कैसे मेंटेन करना चाहिए, इसमें क्या क्या ट्रबल शूटिंग प्वाइंट हैं, अगर उन्हें कोई दिक्कत आती है तो उसका क्या सोल्यूशन है, ये सब चीजें हम ट्रेनिंग वर्कशॉप में बताते हैं.
Today 400 Terry gasifiers are being used in various micro, small and medium scale industries. Collectively, they have resulted in a reduction of 159,000 tons of carbon dioxide emissions. The technology still has a huge untapped potential, especially in India, which produces an annual surplus of 150 million tons of biomass. To make this technology a greater success, it needs service providers from the private sector and also a network of local level institutions and government agencies to ensure a regular biomass supply. They can also help make gasifiers more cost effective. By making good business sense for all, the technology today stands on firm ground. If promoted on a large scale, it will bring energy security to millions of small scale enterprises and also help in cooling off a heated planet.
All right, well, I don't agree with the last statement about the heated planet thing. That's crazy. But nonetheless, the technology is proven technology. And the thing about it is, if you actually look in the farming industry, like, for example, somebody raising corn, you know, once you get the corn off the stock right there, the whole entire stock left over could actually be harvested for biofuel as well. So, you know, it's a win-win situation. If a farmer had a gasification system and he picked up all the stuff while he was, shaking loose with their combines the corn, on the cob dang, and then turn around and use the rest of that to, run gasification systems that would run the combines, so he'd be picking up fuel on the way through. And, with that said, even to the extent when you get to the point where you take all the corn off the cob, when they de-cob it, so to speak. I don't even know if that's proper terminology. But anyway, when you take the corn off the cob itself becomes more fuel. So, if you think about what I've been trying to point out here, you wouldn't have any garbage, so to speak, at all. No waste. Basically, it would fall under what I was talking about a long time ago, a zero waste project, where you actually have absolutely no waste. Every single house has its own built-in gasification system that breaks the trash down. You don't even have to be, you could be a lazy person and just throw your trash in there. I mean, it would even go as far as separating the glass from the metal and all that kind of stuff. Common sense would say don't throw glass or metal in there, but for those people who are just too doggone lazy to take and separate it, you could take that and then have a premium, doggone recyclable right there. Glass and metals and stuff like that, aluminum. But either way, that technology, maybe sometime in the future, when you get more advanced in it and plasma technology, you'll probably see it as a normal household thing, and landfills would be something of the past. You won't hear about landfills anymore. As a matter of fact, landfills are probably you know, like a gold mine now when it comes down to fuel industry and recyclables. You know, there are landfills out there who got wise years ago and started using the trash to make money off of the separating of the precious metals and burning off what they can with gasification systems, and then turning around and making even more gas like methanes and stuff that you know, they could use as well. So when you're paying them to take away your trash, they're making money off of your trash and using it, and then ended up with a really clean facility when it's all said and done. It don't look like your old style dump anymore. Every single landfill out there probably should have already been doing that. They already led by example, showed how you could actually make money off the garbage. So more landfills should have been doing that all along. And, you know, you'd not only save land, but you'd save money and make money at the same doggone time. It's like I can't believe they ain't already doing it. So let's move on to this right here.
What if I told you you could run a Tiger, a World War II tank weighing 54 tons, with wood? You would think I was crazy, but that's where you're wrong. Here is a picture of a Tiger converted to run on wood. Yes, wood. And I will explain how this process works. But first, I want to give you a taste of the history behind this modification. During World War II, Germany desperately needed an energy source to run vehicles. Throughout the war, Germany was failing to produce the oil it needed for fueling its war machine. Synthetic fuel production was in progress to help, but it was never enough. It was said that the invasion of Russia was heavily motivated by Hitler wanting to control the oil fields near the Black Sea. Any fuel that was produced was sent to the front lines where it was needed most. Many civilians still needed to go about their normal lives to be productive members of society. Private cars, trucks, buses, tractors, motorcycles, ships, and trains still had to run. And on top of all of this, the German army still needed to train people to drive tanks. In order to keep their training schools up and running, the German army began to look for new alternate energy sources. Many ideas and different programs were put into place looking for alternate energy sources. Town gas, or Stadtgas in German, is similar to gas used in cooking, like on a stovetop or for heating a home boiler. This gas could be used by vehicles which had to have modified engines and tanks for the storage of the compressed gas. That was just one method. Another thing was donkeys and mules. Not really an alternate source of energy, but hear me out. Donkeys and mules were used in large numbers to transport the equipment needed by the troops. Rather surprising for an army that was proud to have a vast amount of motorized transport and attack vehicles. Germany had 1.1 million donkeys and mules on average throughout the war. These animals were not only used to transport equipment, but to tow artillery pieces with around 8 horses per gun. Around 600,000 to 700,000 horses were used in Operation Barbarossa, which was the invasion of Russia by Germany. Coal is another energy source. It could be used to create synthetic fuel. And synthetic fuel is very similar to the normal fuel they would have used. They would be able to just create a liquid, and that liquid could be poured into the normal tanks of whatever vehicles they were using. But what we're going to be focusing on today is wood gas, also known as Holzgas in German, which will be the main alternate fuel source we'll be focusing on for this video. Wood gas is a gas from burning, can you guess it? Wood, in a process called gasification. Although wood doesn't have to be the primary fuel, other carbon-based fuels should work fine. In the same time period of World War II, China was using charcoal instead of wood in its gasifiers. Wood gas has similar properties to town gas, and if you remember, town gas is basically just domestic gas that you might use at home. There were several variations of gasifiers, and different people had different views on how they should be made. So I will just give a general overview of the concept of making wood gas. Chopped wood is placed into the vessel, also known as the gasifier. This is where the wood is burnt to produce gas. At the top of the vessel, there's a lid for depositing the wood. This lid is to be closed when burning the wood. At the very bottom of the vessel, there will be one or several air intake holes. And at the very bottom of the gasifier, there will be a pit with a grate above it. The grate stops the wood from falling down into the pit, but allows ash to pass through. The pit may or may not have an easy access hatch for getting rid of the ash, essentially just shoveling it out. The whole vessel though, this whole gasifier, should be a closed system apart from two holes. one taking air into the system, although it can actually be multiple holes, but for the sake of keeping it simple, let's just say one hole. One hole is for air going in, and one hole is for the produced gas to come out. The produced gas will travel down the pipe to a cooling unit. This is a fancy way of saying a radiator, you know, like the one in the car to cool the engine down. When the gas is cooled, water vapour and tar are removed from the gas. There will be a container or a tank to catch the residue from the liquid tar and water. The gas will then go into a filter, which will clean out the impurities in the smoke. The filter doesn't have to be complicated, even very fine sawdust will work. The gas is then drawn through, with the help of a blower, basically just an air pump, to a carburetor. The carburetor is a device that can control the mixture of air to fuel, or gas as it is in this case. It is important to have the right ratio of air to fuel to have optimal combustion. Finally, the mixture of gas and air can enter the engine. It may take a while for the gas to get up to an optimal temperature from when first setting the wood or other fuel source alight. It can take anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes depending on the fuel used and the amount of it. This is just one of the several downsides of Hulls gas. The key downsides of Hulls gas are the massive size of the unit needed, the main bulk being of the gasifier chamber, and also the additional radiator for cooling the gas. The slow starting speed, like I said earlier, unlike petrol, you just can't jump in your car and go. It takes time for the wood to reach your optimal temperature. This temperature is roughly over 1000 degrees Celsius, anywhere upwards or maybe even 1800 degrees Celsius. Another downside is less energy produced from wood gas than from fossil fuels like oil or coal. Finally,
just pause this while he's talking about the downsides of this deal. This is the conventional way where you're actually using the wood and you're burning it in that chamber, the normal way like you would a fireplace. But when you start talking about plasma technology, you would actually have the capability of shrinking that system down, and maybe even to the extent of, instead of putting just chunks of wood in there, you could use like wood pellets or whatever and have those fed in a different manner. So there are ways that you could actually scale this down, but as it stands right now, it is pretty bulky. But if you're using it for home heating or gas to run a generator in order to produce electricity, then, as long as it was a model that was made in a safe manner with safety precautions, you wouldn't have an issue. Because there are other drawbacks where if you don't use these things right, you can blow the thing up because you got too much fuel going. But, even at that, with the proper pressure safety valves and storage tanks, you could store excess gas until you actually needed it. So let's keep rolling here.
It is a fairly lengthy procedure to shut down the machine. Even if all air input valves are closed, the fire in the gasifier will be extinguished, but the residual heat will still produce gas. Precautions such as running the excess gas through another burner have to be taken. If the wrong shutdown procedure is used, there is risk that the gasifier may explode. Key advantages of Hulls gas: fairly cheap to make and run with the absence of oil and coal. Another advantage is easy to acquire wood. Any biomass can also be used as well, so you don't necessarily just have to use wood. Anything that can burn could theoretically be used in a gasifier. Cleaner burn than wood, which is very surprising. You would think for carrying a mobile, almost a bonfire on the back of your vehicle, you would have massive clouds of billowing smoke coming out the back. But this is not the case. I'm not quite sure how the chemistry works, but wood fuel actually has less soot produced than would be from oil or coal. If you want to know how to build a gasifier, there are plenty of guides on the internet, and many videos on YouTube taking you through the process. If you're serious into wanting to know more detail, and actually start to finish guide on how to build a gasifier, I kind of understandably oversimplified my description of this process on how the gas is made, since I'm actually not that knowledgeable on this stuff. I thought I'd leave it to you guys if you want to know more about it. Below is a document published by the US Federal Emergency Management Agency, also better known as FEMA. This document is way back from 1989. It is still very useful. You can find this document and other sources for this video in the description below. Wood gas doesn't have to just be to power your car. The gas can be used in a gas generator to generate electricity for your home. If there's ever a crisis such as fuel shortages or downed power lines, it'll be rather handy to have one of these about. The system could be used in conjunction with solar panels in a rural area as a backup power supply if normal fuels such as coal, gas, oil are in short supply or not actually available. Now we're going to go back to World War II now. Around 500,000 vehicles that were wood gas powered were used in Germany at the end of the war. This number is made up of personal cars, tractors, trucks and half tracks, and tanks. Let's go into depth on the different variants of these wood gas powered vehicles. Let's start with tanks and half tracks first. Here we have a modified Panzer I with a gasifier unit on the back. Notice the lack of a turret and superstructure. This is a common theme with training tanks. My guess would be this is to cut down on the cost per unit for training vehicles. Here is a picture of the same tank but with a larger vessel for burning wood, and unlike the last one, actually has storage tanks on the sides. This next picture is from 1945. Just visible at the back is the gasifier. You can see some storage tanks to the sides too. What I find interesting here though is the mock-up turret. From my understanding, this tank would have been used as a dummy enemy tank for practice. I included this picture because I find it rather cute. This is a Panzer III turret on a Panzer I base. The Panzer III is a much bigger turret than the Panzer I. An additional crew member can fit in here to practice three-man turret operation procedures. Also visible at the back is a small gasifier. This tank has the biggest gasifier that I've seen on any vehicle, and it needs it. This is due to the weight of the Tiger being over 50 tons. Admittedly, driving school tanks are missing turrets and armor, so the weight may be quite less than the official number published. To put the weight in perspective, the tanks you saw earlier were Panzer I's. They weigh around 5 tons. That's 10 times less than the Tiger. Okay, let's go into half tracks. Here we have a half track with a small profile gasifier on the back, just poking out the back of this picture here. This picture has a better view of the low profile unit on the back. And here's another one, but with a much larger unit on the back. Notice how in these pictures of the half tracks, the reservoir tanks are quite small. These storage tanks are for extra produced gas, which can be stockpiled in the reservoir tanks until needed by the engine. The reservoir tanks are smaller on the half track due to the smaller engines, which have better fuel consumption rates than the tanks. Personal cars, trucks and tractors. This is an interesting example of a gasifier unit being built around the car. You can see the gasifier chamber on the back, with a pipe channeling the gas to an extra radiator fitted on the front. Just underneath the radiator is a precipitation tank. I find it interesting that the pipe carrying the gas is travelling over the top of the car rather than underneath it. My guess is because the process of making wood gas creates large amounts of carbon monoxide, which is extremely dangerous for humans. By having the pipe go over the car rather than underneath, any leaks in the pipe can vent the gas into the air, where it can harmlessly diffuse. This simple change could avoid the situation of having carbon monoxide leaking into the passenger cab. Of course, this theory could be completely wrong. There could be a much more simpler explanation, such as not being enough clearance under the car. Fixing it to the roof may have just been easier for the mechanic. This is another example of a bit more stylish compromise for the unit, which is now in a towable trailer. This is a truck that runs on wood gas, and it's pretty close to an example of the ones that were used in World War II. Here, we have a tractor running on wood gas. This isn't one from World War II, although I could easily have found pictures of them. I wanted to show you guys this tractor. You can see it's Frankenstein's monster-esque as it's made with a mishmash of parts. All the parts making the unit seem to look like scrap, which goes back to my point of saying the system is relatively simple to assemble. Here, nothing to do with World War II now, we have a compact gasifier unit running a generator to make electricity. In this video, he actually shows he's running power tools from his wood gas generator. This video is actually a great source if you want to know more about gasifiers, as it provides good commentary on how his unit works as it goes through the startup procedure of it. I guess what I find most interesting about wood gas is that it's kind of like a lost technology. Most people watching this video would never have heard about this at all. Sure, there's good reasons why wood gas is not widely used anymore. The way I see it gasifier is kind of beaten by the convenience of oil. Oil has more energy per cubic meter than wood gas, and also oil does not involve additional equipment to be strapped to your car. Anyways, I hope you enjoyed this video. If you want, feel free to leave a like if you enjoyed it. Subscribe if you want to see more videos like this. Comment down below if you want to add something to the discussion. I'm always reading the comments. I'm also going to direct you to Top 10 Weird World War II Tanks Part 1. I reckon you would enjoy that. Part 2 is on the way soon. Thanks for watching.
Like, comment, and subscribe, or I'll break your fucking legs.
Oops, sorry about that. Ah! Alright, so, basically, he explained it all pretty good. Sorry about that last piece there. I didn't know that was in there. Anyway, here we go. Let's keep moving.
Plastic is everywhere. It's in everything. Your phone, this camera, landfills, mountains, the forest, the beach, the ocean, sea turtles, so many fish. It's everywhere. Hey there, gas guzzlers. Trace here for DNews. If you never had to take organic chemistry, then you just don't know the scourge that is carbon. It's in everything. Everything is a carbon-hydrogen chain. You spend your time moving electrons around, changing bonds, and hating life. Orgo is extremely important because basically all life contains the organic molecule carbon. I mean, molecularly, humans, plants, dogs, cats, pizza, pretty much everything contains carbon. The plastic polyethylene is a long chain of carbons and hydrogens with some strong double bonds between chunks. Petroleum, it's also just a chain of carbons and some hydrogens. Both of these things are polluters, and both come from hydrocarbons of natural gas and crude oil. It might seem like alchemy, but what if there was a way to take all the hydrogens and carbons in crappy plastic and rearrange the atoms into the hydrogens and carbons of a fossil fuel? Guess what, fam? Now there is! This paper's blank. We just wanted to do something dramatic. Anyway, a 2016 paper in Science Advances announced they were able to turn polyethylene into energy, potentially solving two polluting problems with one variable. In their study, the researchers took plastic from bottles, food packaging, and shopping bags, recycling plastic numbers 2 or 6, and mixed it with a catalyst, breaking those long chains of hydrocarbon plastic into an alkane. Alkanes are a class of hydrocarbon. We often burn alkanes for energy, like methane, propane, or butane, for example. By their chemical calculation, they got 56% of the plastic to degrade into alkane oil products, namely diesel. Yep, these scientists were able to turn plastic shopping bags into diesel fuel with a waxy byproduct. That waxy byproduct can then be sold and used for resins and coatings, and the catalyst is reusable after the chemical reaction is completed, and of course you have diesel. But to be honest, this does feel kind of like alchemy, but it is needed. There are a lot of other plastics out there that we need to deal with. The polyethylenes in this process, remember, are only 2s or 6s, but there are dozens of other plastics that accumulate in landfills and oceans. According to the American Chemical Council, if we can figure out this trash-to-energy pipeline, it could create $9 billion in economic output and tens of thousands of new jobs. And they're not the only ones advocating for this. In Australia and the United Kingdom, various startups are converting polystyrene, plastic number 6, as well as 2s, 5s, and 7s, into biofuels. Global plastic production is ridiculous. In 2013, according to World Watch, 299 million tons of plastics were created. 10 to 20 million tons of that ended up in the ocean, with millions of tons ending up in landfills. In Europe, they found 26% of the plastics consumed were recycled, but in the U.S., only 9%. So take that polyethylene, for example. As a product, it comprises 60% of all the plastic trash in landfills. Once there, it breaks into smaller and smaller pieces, but never truly disappears. According to the Union of Concerned Scientists, when you pay for fuel, you're only paying for a little bit of the cost, both the fossil fuels themselves and also the side effects of the mining, extraction, transportation, and burning of those fuels harm the planet and the things living on it. This new process is still creating diesel, but it's not drilling, extracting, refining, and transporting it. So if we could break this fossil fuel chain by circling some of that back on itself, it would be huge. So back to this process. Could this solve our energy problems? Not yet. Though the researchers call this breakthrough unprecedented, the ability to change post-consumer plastics into diesel and waxes isn't as efficient as just getting new diesel. Yet. Currently, the ratio of plastic to catalyst in this process is 30 to 1. According to PhysOrg, the researchers' goal is 10,000 to 1. So while this may be the first step, there might come a day when we look to landfills for our fuel. How do you feel when someone throws away a recyclable thing? I mean, like, puts it in the trash. Because I die inside. It makes me crazy. Tell us about it in the comments. Biodegradable plastics are the hot new thing, but how do they really biodegrade? Check this video to see the answer. And please subscribe so that we can keep talking science with you every day.
Alright, so they're actually talking about putting plastic basically back to work as fuel when it's already been done. I mean, there were folks that were actually showing a process by using heat, temperature, and pressure in order to basically reverse engineer plastic right back into you know, gasoline or even diesel for that matter. So with that said, let's keep rolling here.
For most of us, it's just garbage. But to British inventor Nick Spencer, it's fuel for his new Home Energy Resources Unit, or HERU.
We've got a bag of particularly difficult plastics here. It's all material that would have come out of the domestic stream. So we can pop this all in. It doesn't matter. So this is a nappy, for example. We can pop that in. We've got here some tea bags.
The HERU can process organic material like food and hard-to-recycle materials as well.
Got ourselves a coffee cup here with the waxy coating on, with the plastic lid, sugar's energy. Pop that in. Plastic. Close the lid. Put the catch on. Turn the machine on here. And that's it.
Inside the unit, a three-stage process dries out, heats up, and breaks down all this material into fuel, enough to heat the household water supply.
It's probably important to remember that plastics, even those really difficult plastics like your coffee cups and the yogurt pots and things that are really difficult to recycle, are actually made from fossil fuel, essentially. They're made by man, but the actual raw ingredients is a fossil fuel. And all we're doing is taking that right back to its basic form as a fuel source, and then combusting that fuel source just like any other conventional boiler and making it into energy for your hot water in your home.
Spencer notes that the only items that the machine is not able to break down are metals and glass, but such materials can be easily recycled. In the end, all that's left is a small amount of alkaline-rich ash that can be safely washed down the drain.
From the average home, you're producing around about 2.5 kilos of material per day. And that 2.5 kilos of material will produce about 44% of your hot water requirements. Not your space heating, but your hot water requirements.
HERU uses 1 kilowatt of power for every 2.5 kilowatts of heat energy it produces. The British inventor hopes the device will eventually become as widespread as washing machines and dishwashers and disposable coffee cups. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
So that's pretty exciting news that there's an inventor out there that actually did what I was talking about a long time ago about making a gasification system that would basically turn your garbage into fuel, and he's using it to heat his water in his house. Well, if you expanded that a little farther, not only would it heat the water in your house, but it could actually be used to heat your house, because they have water heater systems on the market today. When you go to your hardware store and you look down, I think it's in the plumbing area over here, but plumbing and heating, but you go over there and you'll see that they got these electric water heaters with you know, high temperature pumps so that they can pump hot water and circulate it through your floor and then put that water into a storage tank as well. And so, you know, you're using, basically at that point, you're using electricity to, you know, heat your water. And I guess they got a gas, a natural gas version and a propane gas version. So this one right here would fall within that category. You could already have the equipment necessary to, you know, mix those two technologies together and never have to worry about paying a trash bill. So your trash would just go right into this this machine that would refine it, just basically use it into you know, for more energy. And then from that point on there, you know, all these other technologies like solar and wind and stuff, you know, every bit counts. And you know, you could use the gasification to run generators when the sun wasn't out or the wind wasn't blowing. So basically turning your trash into, you know, fuel. And, you know, with that said, no more need for landfills when everybody's got a system set up like that. And, you know, you'd have a lot cleaner world to live in, that's for sure. And so that would solve plastic problems, that would solve the old car tire problems, any waste product that you think that's out there, you know, you could pretty much turn back into, you know, some usable product or fuel. So I'm going to go ahead and play this explanation. I think this is the one about the plasma gasification system.
Beyond solid, liquid, and gas lies the fourth state of matter, plasma. Plasma is ionized gas, energized to the point where electrons are freed from their atoms or molecules, releasing extreme levels of energy. Energy that can be harnessed for a variety of applications, such as power generation. Look skyward and you'll see the most vivid example of plasma in action, the sun. Lightning is perhaps Mother Nature's most dramatic example of plasma. A breakthrough technology, plasma gasification applies these same principles to produce energy that is exceptionally low in emissions. The plasma torch is the basic tool for making controlled, continuous lightning. Electricity passes from the tip of one electrode to the tip of another. Air exposed to the lightning bolt becomes plasma and releases enormous energy in the form of heat, 10,000 degrees Celsius. Then, gas is pushed between the electrodes to form a plasma plume. The heat is intensely localized and it dissipates quickly. You can safely stand within feet of the plasma torch. But if you draw air through plasma torches and into a cupola containing a medium that retains the heat and distributes it evenly, one creates a zone of influence hot enough to burst the bonds of most molecules, resulting in simple elemental structures. Metals that do not vaporize will instead melt and be captured in an inert glass form that cannot be penetrated by air or water. Energy-laden, carbonaceous materials such as municipal solid waste will be converted into synthesis gas. The clean synthesis gas is then used to generate electricity for homes, offices, and a variety of industrial applications. And all this without incineration. This is how plasma gasification works. Municipal solid waste is fed into the plasma gasifier. The plasma gasifier has 4 to 6 electric plasma torches that heat air to the plasma state. The hot air is then injected into the gasifier, heating a bed of metallurgical coke and limestone to 7 to 8,000 degrees Fahrenheit. The hot gases now in the bed material break down the fuel to produce a synthesis gas, or syngas, consisting primarily of hydrogen and carbon monoxide gases. The syngas is isolated, cleansed of pollutants and particulate matter, and then used to generate electric power. The remaining inorganic components of the fuel, which do not vaporize, are converted to molten slag, collected through the bottom of the gasifier, and cooled into a glass-like byproduct. The vitrified slag can be safely used as roadbed material for building highways or in other construction projects. The newly created syngas exits through the top of the plasma gasifier and enters a heat recovery unit where the excess heat is recaptured to create steam, which can be used later in the syngas cleaning process. The cooled syngas then moves to the baghouse, a particulate removal system which separates particulate matter from the syngas. The syngas continues through the cleaning process. The cleaning process includes a series of scrubbing and chemical stripping processes that further cools the syngas and then removes pollutants. Once the syngas is cleaned, the remaining gas, composed largely of hydrogen and carbon monoxide, is compressed and then combusted in the gas turbine. The gas turbine spins the generator to produce electricity. Exhaust heat from the gas turbine is then used to create steam in the heat recovery steam generator. This steam is used to drive a steam turbine, which spins another generator to create additional clean energy through an efficient combined cycle process. Plasma gasification is an environmentally responsible technology. When municipal solid waste decomposes in landfills, gases such as methane, a major greenhouse gas 21 times worse than carbon dioxide, are emitted into the atmosphere. Plasma gasification avoids this process entirely, and because it decreases the overall volume of waste, it has the added benefit of slowing down landfill development. Trucks that haul municipal solid waste to faraway landfills consume diesel and generate carbon dioxide. Plasma gasification eliminates unnecessary truck traffic, and to the extent plasma gasifiers displace fossil-fueled power plants, carbon dioxide is further eliminated. Plasma gasification is not incineration, and for that reason, gasifying solid waste is better than landfilling it, burning it, or burning the methane it produces when it decomposes. Plasma gasification generates steam and electricity while reducing greenhouse gas emissions that contribute to global warming. Through clean energy alternatives such as plasma gasification, NRG continues to lead the way in providing environmentally responsible energy and reducing greenhouse gases from the next wave of new power generation.
All right, once again, that little documentary, at the end of that, of course, you know, they had to get that little nick in on global warming. So, you know, I don't believe in global warming, climate change, climate disruption, any of that. It's all crock. But nonetheless, giving the devil's due, it's good technology that, you know, imagine if you had a waste management vehicle, because you did hear in there that the syngas was a combination of hydrogen and carbon dioxide, and so carbon dioxide as fuel, and it's funny because, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, that's what's happening. You know, you're getting this carbon dioxide out, or carbon monoxide in the case of running your automobile, whatever. Either way, you're going to reburn that as fuel. But imagine you got a waste management or a trash truck, and you're when you put your trash in the back of the truck, it automatically goes through the process and starts being gasified by plasma. And that gas is then in turn run into storage tanks, which then in turn, you know, goes into your internal combustion engine and is used as fuel. So you're not even having to pay for diesel fuel to take this thing to a landfill, which by the time it's all said and done, by the time you get to this landfill, it's not the type of landfill that you would normally see where it's full of garbage, because it had already took this process and produced a different deal, which you heard earlier in the deal, was that it was basically a molten gas slag that came down that you could actually grind up and use as road material. So, you know, your trash would actually end up, by the time it gets to the other side, be used as something different than, you know, just throwing it into the landfill, so to speak. But, you know, that technology, I'm saying, if you step back and you look at the big picture, you already got the solutions necessary to resolve the so-called pollution problem. You know, and, you know, the fact that there you can sit there and burn a mixture of hydrogen and CO2 as fuel to, you know, boil water to produce steam to run generators, and the excess heat to, you know, run heating systems, you know, heat water or heat your house or whatever, you know, combination of the two. All these technologies and advancements put in together with older technologies, you know, man, I just don't understand what the problem is. What's taking so long for, you know, society and industry to understand. You know, they're always complaining about so-called climate change and global warming and climate disruption, whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up. But, you know, either way, you're still, you know, everything is fuel, flat out. Every single thing out there is fuel. And so we don't have an energy crisis. There, and those folks that keep on saying there ain't no such thing as free energy have obviously not been listening to mad science. They've obviously not paid attention in science class. And most of those folks out there that are poo-pooing the idea are 9 times out of 10 misquoting the laws of physics, the laws of thermodynamics, all that kind of stuff, because they don't understand mechanically in their mind what they're even spewing out of their mouth. And so, you know, the reason why I like to bring all these subjects up a lot is because during a time when maybe there's a power grid failure and an outage or whatever, that you have options available to you, that you know that you could use these certain things, and the more knowledge you can put into your head, the better when it comes down a time whenever, you know, you need to still be able to generate heat and electricity and do it in a safe manner, that you wouldn't be caught off guard. So even if the power grid went completely down and you already had some of these technologies in place, whether it be solar, wind, gasification, plasma gasification, or even hydrogen technology for that matter, you could be self-contained, you know, completely off the grid if you chose to. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead and play this one right here because it's related to the last one there.
What did I just do there? I did something that probably everyone in this room and the people watching around the world do every day. I just threw a soiled food wrapper in the garbage. Do you ever stop and think what's going to happen to that soiled food wrapper? It'll probably end up in a landfill where none of the valuable materials in that wrapper will ever be recovered. In fact, landfilling is the predominant waste disposal method worldwide. What is the significant environmental footprint that landfilling causes? Are there other solutions? Well, plasma is one of the solutions that innovative minds have come up with to address this, but I'll come back to that in a moment. The developed world generates, on average, 0.5 ton per person per year of household waste. This is actually an astounding number until you think about the Canadian number, which is more than 0.75 ton per person per year, or 2 kilograms per day. What this represents for all of the waste in Canada in a year can generate up to 2.7 million garbage trucks full of waste every year. If we want to use another perspective, if we were to look at the Montreal skyline, we're talking about filling 98 Placeville Maries full of the waste we generate as Canadians. Now, increasingly, waste is being diverted from landfill and being returned into the economy through recycling. Nonetheless, far and away, landfill is still the predominant waste disposal method worldwide. This is where my food wrapper will end up, in a landfill. Another number to ponder. Household waste only makes up 10% of all the waste we generate. Our mines, our smelters, our refineries, our manufacturers, including the ones that made that wrapper, all produce hazardous, toxic, and even biological waste that needs to be disposed of responsibly. And, unfortunately, these waste too typically end up in landfills. Certainly, you know, if we want to know what a landfill looks like, I've prepared this simplified graphical representation of a landfill. With household waste, typically, biogas is emitted at the global warming potential of 28 to 36 times carbon dioxide. Now, normally, once a landfill is full, it'll be capped, and then those biogases will be treated, and in some cases even turned into energy. But also we have chemicals which will leach from that waste and accumulate in the bottom of the landfill, in the form of what I like to call a toxic soup. Now, this toxic soup is treated properly, you know, captured, treated, and disposed of. But in most places in the world, including in many developing countries, there is no biogas capture system, no protective liner, and certainly no treatment of that toxic soup. Climate and potable water are all negatively impacted by these practices. In fact, if you look on the OECD website, it truly sums it up. Inappropriate waste management impacts human health and the environment through soil and water contamination, air quality, climate, land use, and landscape. So, what are we to do? As a society, we must continue to practice the three R's. What are they? Reduce, reuse, recycle. These are important principles and we must maintain these. But we cannot simply say that once we have done the three R's, that we are to simply bury the rest. This is unacceptable, and I hope that if your only takeaway today is that the status quo is not sustainable, then I've accomplished something. So, is there another way? Yes, there is. Let's talk plasma. Your high school science teachers probably taught you, that there were three states of matter. What are they? Solids, liquids, gases. Well, damn those teachers. They're wrong. There's a fourth state, and it's called plasma. What is plasma? Well, it's like a gas, but in a highly electrically charged or ionized state. The best method I could use to describe plasma is to give you some examples. The surface of the sun is in a plasma state. That lightning bolt that stretches across the sky is plasma. In fact, the northern lights are plasma as well. In fact, neon lights and even that big screen plasma TV, that's plasma as well. In fact, any element on Earth can be converted into a plasma state. In fact, 99% of the known universe is plasma. So why am I talking about plasma when I started this talk about a soil food wrapper? It's because plasma can be used as a tool to transform this soil food wrapper into energy and valuable construction materials. But first, how do we make plasma? Particularly as it relates to the tool for waste, there are numerous ways of creating a plasma. You could either, essentially what you're doing is you need electricity that generates an arc. You do that, you create that across a gas, and then you really transform that gas into a plasma state. You can see on the left, we can use a plasma torch. Or on the right, this is a top-down view of a furnace where we can create arcs in a furnace. Now, as it relates to waste, how this works is as follows. You take unsorted municipal solid waste or household waste, you feed it into a very hot plasma process, a plasma furnace. The intense thermal and electrical and chemical conditions, we're talking thousands of degrees, truly will break down all that waste into its elemental constituents. What am I talking about? Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and metals. No compound can really maintain itself with the intense temperatures and conditions that a plasma presents.
All right, I'm going to pause that just for a second, because if you go look up the GEET reactor, it was a guy that made a system to where he used like a metal rod inside of an exhaust system, and it produced enough heat that basically acted like your catalytic converter in your car. Which your catalytic converter in your car is a reburner of waste fuel, because that heat is so intense inside there, anything that gets in there will automatically, you know, be gasified, essentially combusted or whatever. And so the GEET system, he was showing how you could run your doggone gasoline motor off of everything from water to soda, you know, just trash oil and all kinds of stuff. And on the surface, when you first look at it, it's like, no, that's not possible. But if you listen to what this man just said, then it is possible. You can gasify, you know, anything out there pretty much. And so, you know, with that said, the GEAT reactor really does work. And so why that technology isn't combined with the auto industry? Well, essentially it kind of is, because you got the catalytic converter, which is doing a similar job to it, but not to the extent of you know, the simplicity of the GEAT reactor. If you go out there and look on YouTube, you'll find links on there. If I get a moment or something, I'll try to see if I can find some good links on the GEAT reactor. But basically, it was a modified exhaust pipe that you know, would take different types of fuel and change that, you know, but because of the temperature and the way that the engine worked, that you could use just about any kind of trashy liquid for fuel. And so, like I said, on the surface it might not sound plausible, but if you understand what this guy is talking about, the way his explanation of how plasma actually works, you can generate plasma with either high heat or high electricity. You basically break it into the fourth state of matter, because all those you know, energetic particles in there, you know, is generating a massive amount of energy. So with that said, let's keep rolling here.
But using chemistry, and this is where I now thank my high school science teachers, Mr. Bank and Mr. Boyd, I get to recombine these elements into desired products. The gas off of a plasma process is called syngas, and that syngas can be fed to an engine to make electricity. And the glassy rock-like material that's also produced from a plasma is called a vitrified slag. This vitrified slag encapsulates all the toxic inorganic materials that appear in the waste. It's non-toxic and does not leach to the environment. As a minimum, I can take that at a 95 to 98% volume reduction and landfill it. But why would I want to do that when I can fully recycle that material and incorporate it into construction materials such as asphalt and concrete? In fact, the University of Sherbrooke have done some work where they've actually reduced the amount of cement and concrete by 30% using this material. We can rebuild our crumbling infrastructure using waste. Amazing. So with this vitrified slag and with the plasma process, to illustrate the power of plasma, we can, for example, build nearly 2,000 kilometers per year of double-lane highways using slag-enhanced concrete with all of the waste we've generated in Canada. And with that same amount of waste, we can power all of Montreal and half of the surrounding Montreal area, household power needs of Montreal and the surrounding area using plasma. In fact, you know, plasma has been used in society already. U.S. Air Force Base operated a plasma waste-to-energy system. The next generation of aircraft carriers, called the Gerald Ford class, will all have compact plasma waste processing systems on board. And plasma is also being used and being developed right now to rid the world of some of the most toxic materials known to man, chemical warfare agents. Plasma's small footprint actually enables mobile systems which could be moved to where these wastes are stored. And on the non-military front, plasma is being used to destroy refrigerants, which are formerly ozone-depleting substances, but used to be and still are super greenhouse gases. Did you know that an improperly recycled refrigerator can emit up to 2 tons of carbon dioxide equivalents to the atmosphere? In fact, plasma can, you know, through the destruction of these refrigerants, can actually be used to generate carbon offset credits under both the Quebec and California cap and trade regulations in compliance with the Kyoto Protocol. So,
let me pause this again. Of course, he's into the climate change craziness again. So, you know, about carbon credits and all that. With this type of technology, regardless, there wouldn't be any waste products. And so, you know, the whole CO2, I can't seem to find any documentaries or anything to do with alternative energy that doesn't sit there and talk about, you know, the global warming scam that they have been trying to push on people forever in order to make more money. The oil companies, they probably know the truth, but they ain't going to tell it. They're not going to tell it because, you know, if you find out that everything is fuel, then you won't need them anymore, would you? Because now you're going to be burning your trash and you're going to be burning your, you know, waste, you know, like leaves and grass clippings and things like that that you want to get rid of, biological waste or whatever, even to the extent of taking your septic tank and turning it into a fuel source, and you don't have to worry about ever having your tank cleaned out because it's taking all that and turning it into energy for your you know, energy needs, your electricity, your heating and cooling and all that kind of stuff. So where there's a will, there's a way. That's why I keep talking about the Dream Team, because you get the Dream Team together, you got all these answers, you got all these technologies, you put them into play, into easily understandable, simple to use machinery that everybody and his brother can share with each other, and you don't have to worry about the power grid ever going down, because, you know, the internal combustion engine, it's already proven technology. It's highly inefficient because of the, you know, lack of engineering. To the extent where, you know, modern day engines, even fuel injected engines, they're not near as efficient as they could be. They could be so incredibly efficient that it'd be mind blowing and you wouldn't even be hearing this emissions problem. So it's not that the internal combustion is bad or even that what they like to call fossil fuel is bad. It's the way that we're using it that's bad. So, you know, this is why I keep bringing this stuff up about plasma gasification, and I'm still talking about the internal combustion engine, because you don't necessarily have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You just need to, you know, basically upgrade your design, you know, make it more modern and make it to where you take all those known laws of physics and use them to your advantage so that you're not polluting. It's ridiculously simple, folks, but to try to get this type of mindset going out there, even in the science community or whatever, these folks know this stuff, but they're not saying it. There's a reason why. You know, you're on the petrol dollar. If you're in the United States, that means it's backed by oil. It's not backed by gold. And so, you know, they want to keep the petrol dollar strong. How you keep the petrol dollar strong if the alternative fuel methods come on board, and then now it becomes a matter of national security. So anybody who comes across anything that is going to be super energy efficient, well, they take note of that because they don't want that kind of technology out there yet. They're not ready for it because they haven't figured out a way to get you over to the digital dollar, you know, yet. So they're working on it. Eventually, you won't be carrying around cash, you know. They'll use something like it's a health hazard because you might get a germ on you or whatever. You might make people sick by handing them money. So they're going to work their way until they finally get it to a digital cash, and at which time you'll start seeing these technologies come out because now they got total control over your finances. It's easy to manipulate the digital currency. So, you know, with that, you know, then they would be safe to show you these other technologies because they'd still be able to charge you for it either way. They'd charge you an extra tax or whatever it is that they can to keep on top. That's why the average Joe has to get wise and get informed and understand that these technologies truly do exist. And if you take and use them and you show your neighbor how to use them and everybody knows that it's possible, then now they can put the heat on the industry out there. Why are you charging us so much for fuel? We don't need you anymore. So, you know, with that said, not only will people take time to clean up their neighborhood, because if you want to travel, all you have to do is use like the equivalents of Mr. Fusion, which is what they had in the Back to the Future deal, where you take your trash, dig in your trash and put it into your Mr. Fusion and make fuel for your vehicle so you can travel into the future or the past, whatever. So they already showed you, you know, the future without showing you the future, so to speak. It didn't tell you, it's just a movie, right? Okay. Well, anyway, if you had some common sense and you listened to all these different things that they talk about, they've been leaking information out about free energy for so long. They just don't want you to have control over it. That's the whole entire thing. Think about it. If I'm selling cold medicine, why would I want to give you a cure for the common cold? I ain't going to make no more money on cold medicine because I ain't going to be able to sell none because you got cured. And the same thing applies with the energy industry. The medical industry, the energy industry, the food industry, every industry out there is in it to win it. They're in there to make some money. And if you got a product that is better than their product and you can get that product for free, why would you pay for it? That's the whole thing. You know, even making things more efficiently, a light bulb that will last 100 or more years. I gave a friend of mine a light bulb from an old Edison light bulb. It was over 100 years old, and it still worked. You couldn't get a regular light bulb these days to work that long. And plus, they're even actually trying to outlaw, in most cases, the incandescent light bulb because they say it's inefficient. That's not that the light bulb isn't any good. It's the way that you're running that light bulb that is the difference. You know, it's the way that you're using that power. Now, I've been saying this for years now. You know, it's not that we don't have enough energy. It's that we're not using it properly. And when we figure out how to use it properly, and then everybody pays attention to that, well, then now you don't have these issues. You don't have a giant carbon footprint because it doesn't take near the amount of power to produce the power to run your house that you can think about. And even the power company even knows that. So with that said, if you pay attention to science, you pay attention to nature, you pay attention to physics and have a basic understanding of the mechanics of how things function, then it all becomes simple from that point. You know, if you understand plumbing, then you understand electricity because water and electricity and even air pressure, for that matter, works the same way. They all have the same, pressure and so on, you know. And you can guide that pressure. You can shut that pressure off. You can store that pressure. And if you know what to do with it, you know, speed it up, slow it down. According to their own laws of physics, energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed. So where does it go? It didn't go anywhere. It's still there. Whatever you allow to leak back into the environment, that's still energy that's still out there. And if it's transferring from hot to cold or whatever, there's still a reaction going. Until everything balances itself back out like nature already had it to begin with, well, then there's still energy involved. It even goes to say in nuclear industry, whenever they're making these fuel rods, you know, highly refined radioactive rods, you know, they only use these rods for a portion of its maximum potential because at certain points it won't boil water as efficiently. So now you can't use it to generate steam like you did the brand new rod. So what do you do with it? It's now classified as waste and it goes in a cooling pond for 10 years and then it still has energy. It still has usable energy to it. But instead of monopolizing on that usable energy, what do? They just store it. They just waste it. They let it sit there and deplete itself until finally it gets down to a level to where it's safely to put into a sealed container and then buried, stored underground. And all along they're telling you, oh, it's too dangerous. You know, you got all this dangerous material. Well, if it's so doggone dangerous, why they keep stockpiling it? That's the thing. What they don't want you to know is even after that battery isn't going to push out enough power to boil water as efficient and as they need it, it still has power that you could use for thermoelectrics as well. So, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, the scam is in the details, if so to speak. So if you paid attention to what I've been saying and you realize that these systems have been ripping you off, you know, who paid for that material to be made? Who paid for the use of that material? Who's paying for the storage of it? Who's paying the taxes on it? You think about it. So there's a lot of energy available just in waste products. There's energy available in all the garbage that is all over the world, in landfills and in the streets and in the rivers and oceans. If all that stuff was to be captured, recaptured, and reused, you know, you wouldn't have to keep on digging for resources because you'd already have enough to last you. Recycle and then recycle it again. It's crazy. Even the farmers, if the farmers were smart, they would be recycling last year's fertilizer by using some runoff ponds and having those runoff ponds basically capturing the nutrients from that fertilizer into duckweed and watermill and then using that as a biofuel afterwards. And even to the extent of being able to use it as chicken feed or whatever. You know, nature has a way of taking care of stuff. Nature has a way of breaking stuff down. Nature puts things back to where it's supposed to be. If you're not using it, nature will take it back. It's plain and simple. We live in an amazing world, you know? Let's finish this here out right here.
It looks like it's that magic bullet for my soiled food wrapper, as well as all of the chemicals and toxic waste generated in the production of that soiled food wrapper. So what's the problem? Why don't we have plasma systems or other advanced thermal processing technologies like pyrolysis or gasification all over the world? Three words. Actually, one word, one acronym, one symbol. One. All we want when we throw this soiled food wrapper into the garbage and take that garbage out to the curb is for it to be taken away. Out of sight, out of mind. Two, NIMBY, or not in my backyard. Now, nobody wants a big industrial plant in their backyard, like an incinerator or a plasma plant. I understand NIMBY. As a city councilor, a former city councilor, I experienced NIMBY firsthand, not as it relates to waste management, but to rezoning and urban planning. I get NIMBY. The problem with NIMBY is that you are making the waste. Why are you making it someone else's problem for disposal? A sustainably developed community deals with its own waste. A way is not a solution. First, you apply the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle. But then you use technologies to be able to, like plasma, in order to completely recover all of the energy and materials from that waste, and these systems need to be in your backyard, not somebody else's. Here's the third barrier. In Canada, I can bury garbage in the ground for $50 a ton. Most developing countries in the world, developing countries, I just take the garbage, leave it out in the field, doesn't cost me anything. For plasma or other advanced thermal processing technologies, I need to charge a minimum of $100 or more per ton for the proper disposal of that waste. These three barriers are the reason why landfilling is still the predominant waste disposal method worldwide. So what are we to do? We know that burying garbage in the ground creates a toxic legacy for our children and our grandchildren. Greenhouse gases are being emitted, and the water table is being poisoned by these practices. This is all happening now. This is why we must act now. We have technologies in the world today to properly deal with the disposal of waste and the maximum recovery of that waste. Plasma is in fact one of those. We must let our elected officials know that the status quo is no longer tolerable. We must create a regulatory and fiscal environment whereby only ultimate waste is buried, meaning waste is buried that has been fully maximized in terms of its recovery. And we need to be prepared to pay a little more for the responsible processing of our waste. We must introduce the concept of life cycle, even to post-3R waste, reduce, reuse, recycling. Much in the way that we recycle our paper, our plastic, our cardboard, our metals, we can still give this soiled food wrapper a second life. But unrecyclable paper and plastic in this wrapper can be used to make energy. And the inorganic filling agents in this wrapper can be used to help make roads, and we can use these roads for generations upon generations. So do we really want this soiled wrapper to be sitting in the bottom of a landfill, doing nothing for us but hurting our health and our environment? I hope not. I really hope not. Thank you.
So there we go. There's like another solution. Once again, I don't believe in the whole climate change issue. So the fact is that you got the science that even if you do believe in it and you're so concerned about the climate and the environment, well, there's technologies already on the table ready for you. The solutions are available. Now, the question is how are we going to get these individuals who are the so-called representatives of the world to realize this and put these in action? It all falls down to money, though. You know, if it's cheaper to put it into the ground, then that's where they're going to put it, because they don't want the extra expense. Between the greed and the irresponsibility of taking care of the environment, working in perfect harmony with nature, this is why we're in the shape that we're in today. But as it comes down to the average Joe, these technologies are even available to you. So if you understand these technologies, and even if you could build a dream team in your own neighborhood, you and your friends could get together and enact these technologies on a smaller scale, to where you have each one of your individual homes has a system that is available that will refine your waste, and you could combine whatever leftover byproducts might be that you could use for making materials such as roads and so on. Then, even mixing in with concrete. Well, now that you've got this extra material, you combine that waste together and build things with it that, will be beneficial to the community. So, where there's a will, there's a way. If my grandfather used to say, if you want something done, you got to get up there and do it yourself. If you want it done right, that's probably the best go, because, there's not a whole lot of people out there in the industry that want to take the time or maybe make a little less money to do things. But your combined resources with your neighbor's combined resources have the capability of doing a lot more than you can possibly imagine. So the time to sit down and start talking with your neighbors about these types of technology is already here. So you start mentioning to your neighbor, hey, listen to Mad Science Show, because they're over talking about things on solutions on how to resolve things. And maybe we can't get the governments of the world to do it, but maybe as a small community, we can do it together. We can use these. You've heard example after example of people like in India that are using this for an alternative fuel source to gas or coal or propane, that they're able to save money and help to clean out the trash as well. Think about all the garbage. You can go out and look at pictures, just Google up garbage and look at all the pictures of all the trash laying everywhere. Heck, trash in landfills, tons and tons of resources available sitting there in the ground, just basically deteriorating. So, why keep up on digging up more and more whenever you have an option to utilize that for energy now? That's the whole question. Let's take a drink of my coffee. So anyway, everything is fuel, folks. Everything out there is fuel. And if you understand the simplicity of it, even water, which, a lot of folks out there, you can't run your car on water. Well, maybe not the way that your car is engineered at the moment, but if you understand how, water reacts to different temperatures and pressures and all this kind of stuff there, you could actually use it as fuel, and if need be, use that same exact fuel and the laws of thermodynamics to cool the engine down, while you're in the process of using it. So, it's a no-brainer as far as I'm concerned. I don't understand what's the problem here. You know, we put out all kinds of ideas from everything to different, ways to use energy. We've talked about different ways to generate electricity. You've got motors out there that are already generators. You've got, things that, like alternators that could be modified into being a generator. Years ago, I did one how to turn an AC motor into a generator just by adding some magnets to it. You know, not that big of a deal. But once you understand how all this is working, you got a basic idea of it, and then you take those ideas and you expand on them and you be as creative as possible. And when you find some place where you're stuck as far as, why you can't get something to do something, well, then that's where the dream teams of the world come into play. You got virtual labs worldwide that are sharing information freely with one another. And then you can find where somebody else has already succeeded that they can fix a failure that you might be in the midst of trying to solve. So it's not about we can't, it's about when are we going to. That's the fact right there. We got all the information, all the pieces of the puzzle, we got all the resources available, and even to the extent of financing, we could help fund each other and we could get it done. We don't need to wait around for Big Daddy government. We don't need to wait around for industry to try to get their act together. We don't need to wait around. All we need to do is get up, roll up our sleeves, and put our brains and our bodies to work with each other, and let's get this thing resolved. This is what I've been saying for a long time. I don't get it. I just don't get it. I don't understand why, you know, everyone is complaining and worried about the environment and the world as a whole. You realize how many wars that we would stop because there wasn't no reason to be fighting over resources or where this gas pipeline was going to go or where it wasn't? You realize how much money the average person could save if they didn't have to pay an electric bill or pay a trash bill or pay high energy cost? Think about it. You know, for gasoline or diesel or whatever type of fuel you're in use, it costs a lot of money. Industry's out there to make money. They're not going to tell you about alternatives, and then you start talking about alternatives, they will definitely, without a doubt, do everything that they can to basically make it sound as though it will not work. And that's where you get these so-called educated college geeks that come out there talking about the laws of physics and thermodynamics and completely taken out of context, misquoting, and so on down the line, because they have no mechanical understanding of how nature actually works. They think they're smart, and even the terminology might sound as though they're smart. But the truth of the matter is, they basically are mockingbirds that quote their indoctrination from the school books as if it was the gospel. You know, science has a lot of faith. The people who believe in science has a lot of faith. You have faith that the guy before you was telling you the truth. You have faith that the guy before you wasn't suppressed as far as the information that he could say. So, you know, even the hardcore atheists and scientists and Scientologists, all of them out there to live by faith. The theories of every single thing out there. You know, theories, that's it. It's a theory. You know, we got our best understanding from somebody else's best understanding, and they made a theory, and they made laws of physics in there. Well, it's going to come a time when you're going to have to bypass all that craziness from the Stone Age and start moving into the Modern Age, to where maybe we don't have a full understanding, but we know the mechanics and we know what certain things will do with certain temperatures and certain pressures, and the things as simple as leverage and gear ratios and stuff like that. So we will start moving into the future and building the future technologies right underneath the noses of those who want to keep us suppressed, who want to keep us oppressed, repressed, or whatever, you know? And so, You know, you can have all the faith you want in all the different, you know, scientists out there, because all these brilliant scientists say, well, if you go down and look at the history of science, a lot of these scientists were wrong about a lot of things that they, you know, had theories about that were later on proven that weren't what they were supposed to be. So they were all flawed. You know, you won't have faith in the book because it was written by a man, but you'll have faith in science, the same science that writes the science books that were also written by a man. You know, and you would deny that you are, you know, somebody who believes in something you can't see. Well, you can't see oxygen, but you're still breathing for some reason, because some man out there said that this is what's in the air. You're breathing this, and this is why you're alive, and this is how this works, and this is how that works. But in reality, you know, things might be just a bit different than what you've been taught in school all year, all your life. So if you can get out of that box and stay out of that box and look around and see, and then do the testing, the real science, you know, the testing and repeating and so on down the line, you don't have to base all your ideas off of some textbook that says that you are limited by this and limited by that. Your advancements, you know, boldly go where no man has gone before, kind of thing. You know, you think these folks in sci-fi don't think big, the Star Trek Next Generation and all that kind of stuff? You think they don't think big? You know, all the ways that the Star Wars are beam me up, Scotty, kind of things? Boy, I tell you what, they do think big. And that's why you got these cool movies, these sci-fi movies, where you're going through space and such. You know, without that thinking outside the box, what could actually be possible? You won't ever know. You know, as long as you're willing to just kind of believe what somebody says just because they wear a white lab coat or supposedly educated or a professor. Anybody can be a professor. You can profess anything, but if you ain't got the evidence to back it up, well, I'm saying that maybe your science might need to take a second look at it. So, with that said, you know, it's just mind-blowing to me about, you know, how many people out there will, you know, let standard system, the standard model, the conventional norm to keep on doing what it does, and not even look towards what somebody tell them they got one. So I gotta type a message in real quick here. Sorry about that, folks. All right, kind of can't type and talk at the same time. But it had a little thing going on there. So anyway, you know, look, I know that the people out there, you know, have a lot of respect for science, you know, because science goes back years and years, and all these scientists, oh, how could they all be wrong? Well, because, you know, when you base one idea off of another idea, if it turns out that the first idea was flawed, then you have to go back and revisit the idea after it's been done over and over and over again. And I'm saying, if you paid attention in science class and you understand, you know, the basics of it, and you look at it, and mechanically it doesn't make sense why you can't do this because of that, then why not find a way around that? You know, take the laws of physics and use them to your advantage. That's all we've been talking about. You know, people are out there trying to find zero point, over unity, perpetual motion and stuff. I'm not even saying that that's not possible. All I'm saying is that why even worry about it? Because there is a such thing as free energy. Energy, you're in a sea of energy. And that statement in itself catches a lot of grief, because a lot of people say, oh yeah, these people run around talk about how you're in a sea of free energy, which they don't understand. Think about what's in the atmosphere. There's hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, there's energy all around you. There's particles of dust flowing around, there's something going on, even in a room without no wind or no fan going. There's something, every time you move, there's energy flowing. There's all kinds of different radio waves, waves from space. There's energy from the ground being shook up, moved around. There's energy from the wind. There's energy from the sun. There's energy from the motion of the water. There's energy from the temperature differences, the hot and cold. There, everything out there is fuel. I'm telling you, every single thing out there is fuel. You know, and if you understand the basics of it, then you'll understand how to resolve your problems and the so-called energy crisis of the world. If you say you want a clean, sustainable, renewable energy source and a way to store that energy and a way to use it efficiently, then you should be on board with paying attention to what we're talking about here, because I've just showed you example after example after example after example. History has shown that when they didn't have gasoline or diesel, then they used wood gas. Necessity was the mother of invention. And so maybe this necessity of saving the world might be the new way to go. But energy is free. I don't care who says it. And you can sit there and try to twist and turn terminology all you want. It doesn't matter if you're a professor or a self-proclaimed genius or whatever. I paid attention in science class. I have an understanding of how this world works mechanically. I'm trying to share that information with everybody. I've looked at everybody else's research. Stephen Gibbons in the chat room had posted a link up here at the top. He did an entire page of Stephen's research page where you can see research after research after research, videos after videos, alternative energy research and links, and he put a lot of time and effort in there to bring this information to the table for you. Stephen Gibbons is one of my heroes out there. All these other people in these networks are others of my heroes, because they actually put up, you know, they actually get out there and take their time to try to bring this information to the table because they care. And, you know, the world says they care. The world says a lot of stuff. The world says, you know, we got 12 years, according to the liberals out there, we got 12 years before it's too late to save the world. We're doomed. Yeah? That's what they say. Well, Al Gore said that the sea levels were going to rise. Go back and look at the first time he said that. Check the calendar. See how many years it's been. Have you seen the sea levels get up there? Have you seen everything flooding out? Sure, we've seen some bad weather. We've seen bad weather throughout the history of time. Well, when you got science guys out there and gals out there tampering with nature, well, you're going to have to expect you're going to get a few things. You're out there fracking up the ground, cracking the ground, and extracting the hydraulic pressure out of the ground, whether it be gas or liquid or whatever, then you have to expect you're going to have sinkholes popping all up over the place. Nobody listens to reason. If they did, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. If they listened to reason, we wouldn't have to do the mad science show. But because mainstream science has dropped the ball and basically sold their soul to the devil for a few shekels or whatever, well, hey, that's why mad science is here, because we got to tell the truth like it is. If you think I don't know what I'm talking about, go out there and try these technologies. Try them before you deny them. You know, they're always trying to talk about, you know, like hydrogen technology. It's not efficient because it takes a lot of energy to get the water molecule to separate and such. Well, they also talk about using the electrolysis process, which is the most inefficient way to get that to happen. But regardless of the fact that a man was driving around in the 70s with a dune buggy using different technology, had absolutely nothing to do with electrolysis to the extent of using a couple plates. He was using radio waves. He was using customized injectors in order to do that fast. Part of that technology you have in your microwave oven. Water is a dipole molecule, so if you bombard it with a super fast short wave as it goes from its peaks to its valleys, the north and south of that field, it's going to rock that water molecule really fast. And those water molecules moving around that fast will produce friction, which will in turn produce heat, and it'll cook your food. So imagine you speed that wave up. The wave's moving faster. It's moving so radically that it literally rattles the thing apart. You've seen opera singers raise their voice and meet the resonance of glass and shatter that glass. It'll find any flaw in that glass and it'll crack it. It'll shatter just what they're using their voice. So anything out there, everything out there has a resonant frequency. And if you understand that and you find that specific frequency that will literally rip apart the water molecule, you know, water is the most stable molecule. It doesn't like to be tore apart. And then once you do tear it apart, guess what? It'll put itself back together. It's an amazing, piece of nature that is mind-blowing. It has healing qualities. It has so many different things that can be done with it. You can heat it up and boil it and make your soup or your doggone coffee or your tea or whatever. Or you can heat it up even more and you can turn it into steam pressure that you can turn turbines, turn generators to make electricity. So, and that's just, that don't even scratch the surface. You can use water to cut through wood and steel and stone and stuff. You know, water is as far as I'm concerned, it's the miracle molecule. And if you understand how the basic science and physics of it, like I've been saying over and over again, you can use those physics to your advantage to get it to do the work that you want it to do. You know, we have been told for so long that things are not possible. And with that said, you know, if you believe it's not possible, you're not going to take those ideas and run with them. You know, or when it comes down to the financial aspect, yeah, well, this all sounds good, but financially I can't afford it. I can't afford to build this thing. Well, maybe you by yourself can't afford to build it. But you grab a couple of your buddies and you share your resources, the burden gets lighter for every person you get on your dream team. You know these are proven technologies, and so when you get these proven technologies put together, then that's where the benefits come in there. You know, the solar panels and all that kind of stuff. You throw you up some solar panels and share that energy with your neighbors right there, and they save a little bit of money on their energy cost. Well, then they could reinvest that money into your people's power, kind of electric grid or whatever. And you start building your own infrastructures together with the savings that you make. Every single bit of technology that you learn that saves you money, you take that excess money and you reinvest it with each other. You help each other with the labor. You help each other with the resources. You help each other with every single thing that you can in order to ensure success. You think that these doggone industries out there, you think that these doggone corporations don't understand what it means to bring a team together? The corporations have their dream team. The governments, the Democrats, the Republicans, they got their dream team. They got people working together for their agenda. They're obviously not working for the people, otherwise we wouldn't be having these conversations because we would already had all this stuff resolved years ago. But that's what we're up against. And while you're sitting there waiting around, hopefully that the they'll have a day of reckoning and decide, well, you know, we're gonna, you know, actually do it, the job we were hired to, and we're gonna help benefit the people. It ain't gonna happen like that. I'm telling you, it's not gonna happen like that. You're not gonna see a hydrogen engine on the market at a reasonable price until it benefits those companies that would take the time to actually build it. You think about the prices of everything out there, and you think about the the supply and demand kind of thing. It all start making sense to you. Companies are in it to win it. They're in it to make the money, and they're going to do whatever it takes that's going to benefit them, even if it means throwing the garbage directly into the trash that goes directly into the landfill, or maybe even makes it down to the ocean somewhere. But the thing about it is that there is absolutely no waste. If everything out there becomes a fuel and everything becomes something that's going to benefit you, then they'll start to take note. You know, if you go out there and look at all these different factories out there, the amount of waste in factories, the amount of waste in the food industry, the amount of waste in the medical industry, every single industry that you can name out there, for the most part, has an overabundance of waste products. And even to the extent of the average Joe, the average household, you generate tons and tons of trash. Depending on how large your family is, it would determine on the amount of trash. Now, you're paying for those products and you're paying for those wrappers, so why not take those wrappers and those products and benefit yourself by utilizing those to generate power that's going to save you money in the long run? So your trash will help to sustain you. Your trash will help to pay your bills. There's an inventor out there. I played the little pod about how he's got that thing set up. He's heating his water in his house with that, you know, with his trash. Might not sound like much, but it's another one of those things. Every penny that you put in your bucket, then that's more money that you can reinvest into your community with your dream team. You think about what I'm saying, folks. It's logical. It's all proven science. And there's no reason why that we as people of the world can't start coming together and working on these things. You know, here at Shaziz Radio, I don't sit there and try to, you know, ask people for money and all that kind of stuff. I don't try to solicit donations. There's a donation link on my website, but you do really have to want to find it to find it. You know, I don't try to push that. That's not what it's about. But the thing about it is that, you know, I believe in this enough that I'm willing to put my own funds on the table and, you know, pay for the radio network and the websites and take my time to build the, prototypes and do videos and share this information with you. I believe in it that much that I'm sacrificing my time of my life to be out here doing what it is that I do. You know, and so if you had more people of that mindset willing to put their resources to the test, well, there you go. There's your solution. There is the ultimate solution, is the people power. Taking that people power and combining your resources and your knowledge and your skills and your talents and your gifts together and making it so. We can't wait around. We can't keep trying to lobby the governments for assistance because they're not going to do it. If you're on the petrol dollar and you're the government and that's your way of keeping control, why would you want anybody talking about alternative energies? Why would you want anybody talking about sustainability? If there ain't people out there moving and shaking and digging up the ground and doing all this stuff, then you lose a little bit of taxes there. You lose taxes from the doggone people that are working for the people that are doing all this. You need that money in order to sustain the insanity that we're living through, folks. That's why the governments do what they do. That's why they talk out of one side of their neck. They tell you one thing and they do quite the opposite. They tell you to reduce the carbon footprint. You reduce your carbon footprint. Why they get into a limousine or a corporate jet or a government piece of machinery, whatever. And that's their form of transportation. They dine very well. They have buildings with security. They have heating and cooling systems in there. Their carbon footprint is massive. And all this time, trying to scare you into believing that the world is doomed, that we're all going to die. And you need to reduce your carbon footprint. You need to be a good citizen and pay your carbon taxes. Well, all these folks out there, these supposed environmentalists out there being the fear mongers and the doom and gloomers, need to come here to Mad Science. If they're really into it to protect the environment, then they need to drop the hypocrisy and get their act together, roll up their sleeves and put their concern to work. You're not seeing that. You don't see that from all these people out there sitting there crying about climate change. And even educated people fall for it. They're like, well, you know, even if it ain't real, then what's the harm of fixing it? Oh, okay, I'll give you that. Well, what are you waiting for then? Because we have the solutions available. The problem is that there's not enough people paying attention. So the only reason why I mentioned that donation thing earlier was because the way that you can help me, if you want to help me to keep this thing going, all I ask is for you to share the information with each other. You know, grab together a bunch of people, have a round table, talk about all these things that we've talked about. Share this information, share the links, you know, get more people up in these chat rooms. Tell them what it is that we're talking about. You know, if there really is a problem and it really needs to be resolved, then I guess the clock is ticking, because according to the media and all that, it's 12 years or less now. You know, so what's the issue? Governments keep on telling you there's a problem, but they keep on being some of the most aggressive polluters of the world. You think dropping a bomb on a foreign nation ain't kicking up some crud in the air? You think that ain't harming the environment? You shake the ground over there, you knock something loose over there. So, hey, you know, in the process of that, I guess you could sell more construction equipment and materials. I guess you could sell more medicine and band-aids and health issued supplies or whatever. And, you know, you got to feed your army, so I guess, the food industry is going to make out like a bandit. The drug industry is going to make out like a bandit. The oil industry is going to make out like a bandit. And all those companies and corporations out there, manufacturing is going to make out like a bandit, while you, the average Joe, is basically used as the pawn in the game that is literally going out there and dying for the system. You're not dying for the same cause that you think you're dying for. You go to war, you're dying for the man. The same man that used to later complain about, oh, well, this guy's corrupt, that guy's corrupt, this guy's a racist, that guy's a this and that. All this kind of jazz keeping you all fighting amongst each other while all these problems that could have been solved a long time ago keep getting scooted on down longer and longer down the line. Well, the future generations are relying on the fact that maybe one day we'll get our act together and they'll have a chance to live happily ever after, or at least in a world that is a lot less hazardous than the one we find ourselves at the displeasure of living in. I don't know what more that I can say that I haven't already been saying. I've been trying to recruit the Dream Team for so long. People that want to get together physically or even on Skype and research together and do work and all that kind of stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong, we've already figured out we do have the Dream Team here at People for People Radio Network and Shaziz Radio Network, because we got our act together. We can find the information. And we can discuss the information without getting angry at each other. We can work together. We work across international boundaries. We do things for this world, just by the things that we talk about and the information that we share. And now all we're asking for is everybody else to share it as well. Share it with people that need to know the information. Share it with people that really say they care about the environment. You know, if you care about the environment and you care about the world and you want to try to be part of the problem instead of part of the solution instead of part of the problem, if you want to get out there and help the people who really believe that we can end wars and famine and sickness in this world, I know we can. Without a doubt, there's alternative medicines out there. There's alternative fuels out there. There's alternative methods of using energy more efficiently. There's alternative ways to engineer things to make them maximize their efficiency, to make them use less fuel, to make them more safe, and so on down the line. We're here in the year 2019, getting ready to go into year 2020, and we're already hearing about you know, possible civil war because of the government gone out of hand, and they, and people are so doggone corrupt. These folks, they don't care about you. They honestly don't care about you. You're expendable. And if that weren't the case, then they would have already come to the table and said, hey, you know, I've been listening in. You got some good ideas. How do you figure we can get these things going? I'm saying, well, you know, you could spend thousands, if not millions of dollars into some bogus plan to save the planet from that phony climate change, global warming, climate disruption lie. You give millions of dollars to the United Nations to, combat it. And what have they done with it? What have they produced? What type of prototypes do they have readily available for the public to be able to utilize? I'm saying with that kind of budget, you and I together, we could build factories. We could build things necessary to, solve these so-called problems. Even though, in my mind, the truth is it's not a problem. But if you're claiming that it's a problem and you're wasting billions of dollars giving it to some corrupt individuals who are not going to get any research done, and then divvying up that money between the corrupt mainstream scientists that will say whatever to keep the scam alive so that they can keep their pockets full, that's the whole issue right there. We're not trying to fill our pockets. We're trying to resolve an issue that you claim that we had to the extent where you were willing to take all of our taxpayer money and give it to old Snively Whiplash, who's already had his hand so deep in the cookie jar. That's the whole thing. When people are ready to get real science in their brain, then they need to be showing up at Mad Science, because Mad Science is there for a reason. It's mad science because it makes me mad that real science has got buried under the rug, or even farther than that, basically flushed down the commode, and people are sitting there lying while educating your children. And granted, most of these teachers might not even know they're lying, because they have faith that the people that told them this information knew what they were talking about. Oh yeah, well, you know, NASA, they're really smart people. They're all the best scientists. Oh really? They got some explaining to do. Anyway, the doggone science in the college science professors or whatever, same thing. Same exact thing. You know, they got some explaining to do. Why'd they drop the ball? Why are they still getting money from the government and not being able to resolve issues that are so ridiculously simple to resolve? It's mind-blowing, folks. You know, war after war after war. How many wars are we going to have to go through before we finally get our act together? And dropping bombs on people ain't cleaning up the planet. You know, going out there and shoving all your garbage down in the ground, and it's not cleaning up the planet. And none of this is doing any good. And those folks out there who are making the attempt to do good, you know, plasma gasification, even wood gasification, burning trash for fuel, you know, or even hydrogen technology, those are the ones that should be uplifted. Those are the ones doing real research, where the mainstream science and even the creeps like Mythbusters that don't even know what the heck they're talking about when it comes to hydrogen technology, they made complete and utter fools of themselves. They lost viewers because of their shenanigans when it comes down to alternative energies. Now, maybe some of the things that they showed on there about different generators or whatever, they never even completely did the things right. But they make it out to look like none of these technologies are any good. It don't matter which alternative energy researcher you think about out there. Maybe they didn't have the specific terminology to please or appease the doggone mainstream science guy, so that the mainstream science guy could get his head out of the sand, so to speak. I almost said something worse, but nonetheless, you understand my point. If they can't get their head out of the sand, if they can't come out of the box long enough to see that there's a possibility that maybe these alternative energies would work if something was changed a little bit. You take this piece with that piece because these physics work with those physics, and now you got something good. There are things out there, you know, when you talk about hydraulic pressure and stuff like that, look at what you can do with liquids. You can literally lift tons and tons of stuff because you got a positive displacement pump that is forcing this liquid into a cylinder, and it ain't got nowhere to go, and the pressure gets so extreme inside there, you can lift heavy objects, whereas if just your bare arm, you couldn't do that. Using leverage, using physics, everything known about physics. We've been able to build all kinds of machinery to do amazing things. Look at the tool technology. Cordless drills, cordless saws, cordless everything now. And those batteries are strong enough to work long enough to get some actual work done, and then you can recharge those batteries. The thing about it is, with all that, you couldn't have done that without a basic knowledge of physics and how these things work. And so we're not talking about trying to violate the known laws of physics. We're only talking about using them to our advantage to get the work done that we say we need to do. Now, if these people out there are still out there complaining instead of actually listening, then they're not doing nothing. You know, put your money where your mouth is. Stop sending billions of dollars to the doggone UN for something that they're not ever going to do. You know, how are you going to do it? You talk about pollution. Go around and count up all the volcanoes in this world and all the crud and toxic fumes that come up out of that. They're not over there saying, hey, let's cap off the volcanoes because they're polluting. Heck no, they're more busy trying to put a cork in your doggone exhaust pipe. You know, they're trying to tell you it's your fault. Well, if you honestly believe it's your fault, then these alternative methods and ways to re-engineer things, maybe you ought to jump on board. Maybe you ought to fix that internal combustion engine at the very least. Do some things that have been proven, like water injection, to take that thing to make it more efficient. Where you ain't got premature detonation, where you don't have your doggone knocking in your engine, and your engine will last longer. There's so many different things that I could that I could go on and on and on about. Some of you who are regulars on the Mad Science Show, you've heard it, and you know it's like preaching to the choir at that point. But even you folks, wonderful folks, you need to try to share information with everybody and his brother that you can. Because I'm not going to be around forever. You know, I'm not special. I'm just a guy that paid attention in science class and have an understanding of how the world works mechanically, and that we could benefit by using all this knowledge and pointing out, you know, with all my friends that like Stephen Gibbons in there, going out finding all these leaks to different researchers and sharing those informations, and all people from People Radio Network doing the same. We all come together. We got our act together. Now all we're waiting for is those out there who want to basically put their money where their mouth is. Get up there and try these things and see how far that we can push them. Even a wood gasification system could be improved upon. It could be scaled up or scaled down to whatever your needs are. That's all I've been saying. I mean, I can't do it myself. You know, I can keep this website going. I can keep on doing what I can. So, you know, I'm trying to do the best I can. Yolant's in the chat room said, Mother Earth machine has sold out. Latest headlines on magazine said, global warming is over if we pay for it. Yeah. Yeah, we pay for it. Funny thing is, I had about 6 or 8 inches of global warming all over my house and my yard, you know, and so somebody's got some explaining to do. That global warming gets obnoxious. You know, you can't get around easy in it if you ain't got the right vehicle, but, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. So, I'm trying to do what I can. Yolant said, incredible people, even open the dang magazine, gonna go to the store and take a photo of it. Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. You know, the hypocrisy that's out there in the so-called global warming alarmist and the governments and the people who are out there, you know, working on ideas and stuff, the hypocrisy is just mind-blowing. You know, oh, it costs too much money, we're not there yet, we can't do this, we can't do that. But in the meantime, you need to ride the bus or walk or ride a bicycle and reduce your carbon footprint. You need to get rid of your cars and so on down the line. You know, and at the same time where they're promoting all this and after preaching doom and gloom, they're doing the same thing. And some of them even worse, some of them after protesting climate change while throwing trash on the ground. Really? He's standing out there with a wooden stick and a paper sign saying save the trees, and I know I say that ad nauseum, but it's true. These so-called environmentalists are hypocrites. I don't see no environmentalist here saying, hey, what kind of ideas you got for solutions? We'll back you up. We got this large group of people. We're willing to get our hands dirty and do some things to prove some of these technologies. You don't see that. You don't see the governments coming together and offering up, hey, here's a bunch of money for anybody who can solve this problem. You know? And we'll give you some money up front to do real research. You're held accountable for the money, you know, and you do the research. You don't see that. You see them giving money to colleges. And you see those same colleges spitting out a whole bunch of liberal propagandist socialist agendas, and the kids, they come out with absolutely no solutions. The only thing they come out with is more complaints, more demands of a government to do the job for them. If you take these same doggone people and you educate them properly on all the solutions available, real science and real physics, and if they really have a true concern, then they'll resolve the issue. But for most part, what's coming out of college is lazy, uneducated, unself-motivated, liberal, socialist, wackos. I hate to say it, but it's the truth. You think I'm lying? Go out there and watch the media. You'll see them all the time out there in the streets with ski masks on, calling themselves Antifa and burning down their own communities and hitting people in the heads because they don't like the color of their hat. Calling everybody racist and trying to shut down their talk by putting a siren so loud nobody can think straight. And they're calling you the fascist. That's what they do. That's what you got coming out of your colleges, folks. And the one good ones who come out of the college with an open mind, willing to do things, are being hindered by the masses that are coming out who just want to sit there and complain and get Big Daddy Government to do their work for them. They almost deserve what's coming down the line to them. I'm saying that because I'm not trying to be mean, but they almost deserve what they're going to get. Because at the rate that we're heading, in the way that we're going down the road, they're pushing the agenda of the system, and what ends up coming down the pipe at them isn't going to be what they expect. Big Daddy Government ain't going to fix it for them. Big Daddy Government, Big Mama Government, they're going to keep their job by keeping you at each other's throat. They're going to keep their job by keeping you in jail. They got a war on drugs. They got a war on guns. They got a war on men. They got a war on women. They got a war on faith. They got a war on everything. So, they've got a war on your kids because the college education that these kids are getting, even from grade school all the way up to high school, all they're getting is indoctrinated. So, hold on there. What's up, Ted? I'm live on the air. How's it going?
It's going good. I wanted to call in and say Merry Christmas to you and Happy Holidays to all your audience and everything like that.
Well, Merry Christmas to you too, brother. So
I hope all your wishes come true. I hope everything you want in life is attained, and you know you have a beautiful new year and good health to boot.
Well, I wish the same for you. I'm you know, sitting here thinking about all the different ways that we can fix this world, and those would be my Christmas wishes.
Yeah, that's me too. It. I think this, I view this year, 2020, clear vision, 2020 is going to be the year. I'm glad that you're making moves towards it, she says, because I'm doing the same.
Well, I'm going to keep on keeping on. I'm going to keep on sharing information and ideas with people in hopes that they'll take those ideas and run with them.
More power to you, brother. Well, I'll get you off the line, let you get back to it. I just wanted to share that with you and your audience.
Alright, well, I almost got my new lab done. I got a few more things to do with flooring and walls before I start hanging the shelving and all that, but my new lab is going to spark off in this 2020 year some really good videos that are going to be beneficial to everybody, so stay tuned for that.
I'm excited for that for sure.
Alright, well, take care, Ted. Good hearing from you.
Good to talk to you, brother. Peace.
Peace. Alright, so there's Ted, and he's wishing everybody a happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and all that. So, you know, folks, I ain't trying to be a jerk to nobody, but sometimes mad science has got to say it like it is. We have all the solutions necessary to resolve all the problems of the world. And at this stage in the game, if you're still complaining, then you're not doing anything. You get out there in your communities, get you a dream team started, get you some people with talent, people can weld and people who can woodwork and so on down the line. You know, it takes a whole lot of people to build a house. A lot of people with a lot of talents, a lot of people with a lot of tools. Construction companies have figured out they bring the best of the best together. They provide a great product for people, and people will continue to support them and come back and do business with them. Same thing can be with the average entrepreneur, the average group out there. And you'd be surprised at how many resources that you could get for free out there from companies who are trying to throw things away, because a lot of companies are wasteful. Little scraps of wood or plastic or metal that they can't use for the building deal. Construction companies are a gold mine of garbage that they take to a construction dump and it gets wasted. So there's more materials right there. In the food industry, same exact thing. Whatever can't be eaten, whatever is expired, gets thrown into trash. Well, that could also be a resource that could be utilized. In the medical industry, things that would normally not be able to be recycled as far as plastic or whatever can still be reutilized to make fuel, and in a safe manner as well. It doesn't matter which industry you're talking about. Any byproduct that is made by industry that is normally wasted could be recycled, repurposed, re-engineered in order to be able to be useful. And so essentially you would come down to a world that was zero waste. You wouldn't have any waste products. That's the thing. And we spend so much time out there working to buy products. And a lot of the stuff that we buy, because of the wrappers that it comes in, generates a lot of trash. You know, even the vehicles we drive, a lot of people want to complain about them, but a little bit of TLC and some re-engineering here and there, and you can make that thing more efficient. Even if you're saving a gallon of fuel apiece per day, that's a lot of fuel. You can make a big difference. You as an individual can make a big difference. And just the way that you recycle can make a big difference. You know, if you take the time to separate and clean it up and, make it to where it's now a premium recyclable and it's not garbage anymore. People want to ban straws, plastic straws, because they say that they're bad for the environment, you know. And why? If you made a special container to put the straws in when people were done with the straws, you made a special container to put them in. Even those could be recycled. Everything can be recycled. There's nothing that cannot be recycled. But, you know, if I'm just talking to the choir and the choir ain't out recruiting, you know, we're not getting our message far enough out there to the real people of the world who have real problems that need to be resolved. Imagine somebody, a low-income family, that realized that they could actually make a few pennies off their garbage. There are a few people who have figured it out, but we can make it easier and better for those folks. We can make it easier and better for industries out there like restaurants and, convenience stores. Go out there and look. If you think I'm kidding, go out there and look. Go look behind just about every single business out there. They got a huge dumpster. And inside that huge dumpster is a gold mine of material. And if you wanted to be a really good entrepreneur, you go on there and offer to take their trash away for free. Of course, the company that has the dumpster out there might not like you anymore, because if there's an empty dumpster, they don't get paid. So they won't be making money off the dumpsters if you're taking away the trash for free. Maybe that company will start getting wise and say, well, these guys are making money off that trash they're taking away for free, so let's say we'll take our trash away. We'll take their trash away for free. You see how that works? Where there's a will, there's a way. If you make the trash out there that companies make you money as your dream team, you can reinvest that money into each other and build your own infrastructure. That even when the mainstream power grid goes down, it ain't no loss, because you're already ready to go. You have a backup plan for a backup plan. There's a solution right there. It's an easy solution, to talk about. It might be a little bit more harder to get everybody together to do. But once you got that momentum and you got everybody doing things together to benefit your communities, it's only a matter of time from that before you finally realize that your infrastructure works better than the main infrastructure, and eventually that system over there will become obsolete. The way that the fuel industry, you'll watch as fuel prices begin to go down, because they won't have any other alternative. They have competition now. They have the average Joe who's not buying near the amount of fuel anymore. They have the average Joe who's producing their own energy. That's the way you win this game, folks. That's the way you win it. And if you're in it to win it, and you got your brothers and sisters next to you, you'll make it happen. Mainstream science dropped the ball, so mad science stepped onto the table there, and we're not going anywhere. Mad science is here to stay. And so those folks out there that say, oh, you can't do this and you can't do that, well, you're on the opposite side of the fence. So if that's the mindset you want, stay over there, because you're just going to slow us down. We have the information necessary. Combined, we have the resources necessary and the people power necessary. So all I'm asking is for all those folks out there that believe in what I'm talking about, get out there in your community, start yourself some roundtables, start yourself a dream team, share this information, get all these networks, get people in the People for People radio chat, get people in the Shaziz radio chat. Let's get everybody in here having some dialogue and getting some solutions going. We can fix this world. We don't need the system the way it is. We don't need the companies. We don't need the corporations. They need us. They need us to buy their products. And the day that we stop buying their products, that's when they'll get noticed. That's when they'll take note. The day when our money stops flowing into their pocket, that's the day that they'll change their behavior on how they actually do things. When they start seeing that there are people willing to take away their trash for free, they're going to be questioning, why would they want my trash for free? And then eventually, because of the greed, they're going to want to keep their trash. They're going to want to make money off of that trash. And so the trash won't end up in the landfill. It won't end up in the oceans. It won't end up in the streams. It won't end up in the water table. It'll start getting recycled the right way. So, folks, you've been listening to Mad Science Show. If you enjoyed this show today or any other day, there's tons and tons of podcasts out there. Find your favorite one and share it with somebody. You know, tell them about my YouTube channel. Go over there, because I got my new lab is under construction. Once I get that together, I'm going to start going, showing some really awesome stuff. And I can't wait. I can't wait to share that information with the world. But I really could use your support. I put all this on the table, and I do it with my own resources and my own finances, and I'm not begging and pleading for anything other than to share links. It's as simple as that. You share those links, and then you help me move this process forward, and hopefully we'll bring the dream team together, and we'll fix this world one positive pebble at a time. Folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love. Take care.
Was that man that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.